What's up, everybody? This is Matt Stryker, and you're listening to the Solid Monster Sounds Off. Now turn the volume up!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster Sounds Off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
We like fighting a woman?
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Come over here and fight me!
Delete! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 568 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, here for Bound for Glory Sunday, October 14, 2018. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you to Dalvin for that clip that you heard there, and Matt Stryker, of course. Appreciate that. Hope everybody down in the Florida Panhandle is doing okay after Hurricane Michael. That thing was a beast. These storms just seem to be getting stronger and stronger. And so if you live along the coastline, I feel for you. And I live in New York, so I'm sure we're going to be in the line of fire with these storms in the future as well. You know, I did a radio interview after Hurricane Sandy hit. So this is going back 5 or 6 years now. And this was many years ago, and I said at the time, I made the crack, you know, during the interview, I said, the South Street Seaport will become more sea and less port. And it may take a while for that to happen, but it's true. It is sad, but it's true. So anyway, hopefully everybody is doing okay there. If you are affected by that, I want to shout out one of our loyal listeners. He's been listening, I think he said, for about 4 years now. But Zachary Evans, I know he's listening right now. I want to say thank you to him. I want to say thank you to Snapped Customs. He did a really cool thing. I guess I had made a comment on the podcast many months ago. Somebody had asked me something, and I said, you know, one day it would be cool to have a Solid Monster action figure. Well, Zach took it to heart, and as a birthday gift, he had a friend of his who does this sort of thing create what is the very first custom Solid Monster action figure. They're not for sale or anything like that, but I thought it was a really cool thing. I was not expecting that. When I opened it, I saw that, and I said, oh, this is interesting. Who would buy this? I said, well, no one's buying it. It's going on display. So Zach is he's a cool guy. I've met him before, and that was a really nice thing for him to do. So I wanted to shout him out. And again, Snapped Customs, if you look them up on Facebook, if you look them up on Instagram, they do some cool stuff. Actually, it's a one-man operation, and he does a hell of a job. So thank you for that. I will proudly display my my action figure. Or as I, if I remember, my parents when I was much younger used to call them, my father would call them dolls, which would aggravate me and my brother to no end. They're not dolls, they're action figures. The Halloween meetup, want to just plug that real quick here. We are doing a We're doing a Sound of Halloween Madness meetup. There we go. Sunday. October 28th is the Evolution pay-per-view. We are doing the meetup the day before. So Saturday, October 27th, beginning at 6 p.m. at Beer House NYC. It's only two blocks away from Grand Central, so it is conveniently located. They have a lot of German beer there and food. So like if you're into the whole Oktoberfest vibe, you'll really like this place. And it's similar to the place we've been to before in Brooklyn, the KBH with the long tables. It's very similar to that, only this time it's in Manhattan instead of Brooklyn. And who knows, you know, as the night progresses, who knows where else we might end up. Costumes are encouraged. They are not required. I don't want people to think that they can't show up unless they get all dressed up. Everybody is welcome, even under 21. You are allowed into the venue. There is no ticket. There is no cover charge to get in. At least not for us, there isn't. So I will hopefully see many of you there. I'll be in costume. I figure if you're going to have a Halloween meetup, the host at least should be all dressed up. So I'll be ready to go. Hopefully I'll see you guys there. Just please RSVP to the event invite on Facebook. A few of you have already told me that you don't use Facebook and that you're going to be there. So the numbers that are on Facebook, which are pretty good so far, we have about a dozen or so people confirmed, not including a handful who don't use Facebook, who haven't RSVP'd. I think there's another 20 or so people who you know checked off that they're interested. They might show up. Please let me know if you're coming. If you want to you know get that new shirt that's up in the store, that Halloween themed shirt in our pro wrestling tee store with the skull on it. There's a sale going on right now through Monday. If you're listening to this in time, Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, I think it ends. You can get 20% off that shirt or any shirt in our store. Just use the promo code RETAIL at checkout. So if any of you wanted to get that shirt, you know, ahead of the meetup, I wouldn't wait much longer because it may take a little bit to ship. So hopefully I'll see you all there. I'm looking forward to that. Audible, what is there to say? Audible's been a great partner to us now for many years. You can sign up for a 30-day trial of the service. You get one free audiobook. There's a lot of good books up there, guys. I mean, some of them I've reviewed before on the show. Many years ago, I reviewed the Bob Holly book, even before I interviewed Bob, which is still one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. He doesn't pull any punches in his book. A lot of things have been said about Bob Holly over the years. You come away from that book thinking that it's an honest, you know, pretty raw read. That's the hardcore truth. That's up in the Audible store. You can get it for free using our code audibletrial.com/solomonster. Sign up for the trial. Use that link and you will be able to cash in on your one free book. And even if you cancel the trial, that book belongs to you no matter what. Thank you to everybody who made a donation this week via PayPal on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here. People seem to like that, which is why we keep doing that. Thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, my double trouble combo there. Out of Control Cody Thomas, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, the Show-Off, Corey Van Dam, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, the Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T, Stephen Handyman Halistick, the Portland Pop Star, Paul Hamilton, the Orlando Commando, Christopher Thompson, the Anarchist, Andrew Heller, Daredevil David Cook, World Wonder, Wesley Fox. We've also got Bernard Bam Bam Hicks, who wants to give a shout-out to his mom, who recently celebrated her 61st birthday, and his best friend, Melanie, who is celebrating her one-year wedding anniversary and has been cancer-free for 2 years now. I'm very happy to hear that, so congrats to Melanie. I also want to wish a very happy birthday to a listener far, far away. I want to wish a happy birthday to Abbas from Iraq. He celebrated a birthday this weekend and is a diehard fan of the show. Almost 6,000 miles away. Thank you, Abbas. I appreciate the support. Swamp Fox, Zorth, Twisted Blade, thank you for the kind words on iTunes. And last but not least is a shout-out to the Chicago Screamer, Ian Noel Camelotes. Ian was the person who made some news this weekend at the Ace Comic-Con Midwest event during a panel with Seth Rollins and Alexa Bliss. You may have seen this video floating around online. He asked each of them, towards the end of the video, who outside of WWE would they like to wrestle? Somebody who is not signed with the company, who is not on the roster, who would they like to wrestle? Their ideal opponent. Alexa said it was former TNA star Madison Rayne, who just competed in the Mae Young Classic, because they came up together in their bodybuilding days. They both used to be bodybuilders, and so that's how they first became familiar with each other. So she picked Madison Rayne. And Seth Rollins said that he would like to wrestle Kenny Omega because he believes that he himself, Seth Rollins, is the best in the world. He is the best wrestler in the world, and he said he would like to have the opportunity to prove it. And he feels, apparently, that Kenny Omega is the one guy I guess he can prove it against. It's not Roman Reigns. It's not AJ Styles. He's not wrong. I would say it's probably Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega, Okada, that crew of guys. I think that would be a kick-ass match, you know. And look, Rollins and Omega is a match that could happen. It could happen in a matter of months if they really wanted it to, depending on where Omega signs next. Unless he signs beforehand, he's going to be a free agent in about 2 months or so, maybe three. So yeah, it would be a hell of a match. Me personally, I would like to see Omega and those guys do their own thing for a while longer. I actually don't want them all to come to WWE. Because why should I want them to come to WWE? Do I have any faith at all that they would do right by all of those guys if all of them came over to the company? Of course not. And I said it in August also. This is the other reason why. I said this back in August. Omega should headline that Madison Square Garden show in April with Kota Ibushi for the IWGP title. That should be the main event. So, sorry, Seth. Let's talk about the Impact Hall of Fame. That turned out to be quite the eventful evening last night. I was live in attendance at the Impact Wrestling Hall of Fame ceremony And really, it was a really nice tribute to one of the TNA originals. And I didn't really think about this, but he mentioned this during his speech. The first TNA original to go into the Impact Hall of Fame. And one of the truly nice guys, like genuinely nice people in the wrestling business by all accounts. Everybody, not just that we heard from last night, but just people over time who have talked about this guy, have never said a bad word about him. And that is, of course, the Monster Abyss, a.k.a. Joseph Park. We did not get Joseph Park last night, even though he was, you know, dressed up for the occasion. But he made passing reference to his brother. And it was funny, too, because they did a video, and one of the people in the video who was saying nice things about Abyss was, in fact, Joseph Park. He was talking about his brother. So that was nice to see. It was very nice to see. The venue. Let me talk about the venue here for a little bit before I get into some of the other details. So the venue was Mikhail's Bar and Grill. In Midtown. And there were a lot of people when I first mentioned this on the podcast a few weeks ago who were poking fun. You know, they're having a Hall of Fame ceremony basically at a bar in the middle of New York City. Yeah, but you know what? I've talked about the WWE Hall of Fame before and how I just absolutely cannot stand some of the people who go to those ceremonies. I don't think I've gone to a WWE Hall of Fame in probably the last couple of years. Whenever the one that Kurt Angle went into. Maybe that was last year. That was the last one I went to. I definitely didn't go this year. And I'm not planning on going next year either. And not the only reason, but part of that reason is just because I have grown to despise a lot of the people who go to these shows. And the chanting and just at times where it is so inappropriate to be doing that. But the argument is, well, they paid for their ticket. How is that any different than a wrestling show? So instead of wrestling, they're in, you know, they're on stage talking. People paid their ticket. They should be able to do what they want and say what they want. And to me, that's true to a point anyway, as far as the wrestling shows go. But I do think that the Hall of Fame shows, or let's say in the middle of a really, you know, emotional moment in someone's speech, it's probably not an appropriate thing to start a what chant or to, you know, if somebody is praising their husband. I remember that debacle of Trish Stratus's induction speech, and she mentioned her husband Ron, I think his name is, and just it was embarrassing. There have been a lot of embarrassing moments like that, and I've said before that I would love for them to take those Hall of Fame ceremonies back to the olden days when they used to have them in a banquet hall or like a giant conference room or auditorium room at a hotel. And so if you have any fans there at all, it's a lot smaller and more intimate. That is if you even have fans there in the first place. I would be perfectly fine with that if they did that. Now, I know why they won't, because they make money off it. They can fill, you know, 10 or 15,000 seats. And as we have learned recently, and I'm going to get into this shortly when I talk about Saudi Arabia, it's all about money. And that's really the only thing, everything else be damned, that is the only thing that matters to this company. 3 hours of Raw going to burn out our audience? Shit, we're going to get $50 million. Who cares? You know, Hall of Fame being, you know, ruined by a couple of jackasses? Well, who cares? We can sell tickets. That's all they care about. That's the only language they speak. I give them credit. It was a nice, intimate venue, if nothing else. A little noisy because you had people who were not there for the Hall of Fame in the background eating and drinking, so you had that. But I'm not going to shit on them for that. I actually like it when they do events like this that are smaller and more intimate. Now, there were a couple of LOL TNA moments. I can't not mention this. I was told that the venue did know that Impact was hosting an event upstairs. That's good. They at least were aware of that. But what they apparently were not aware of, and I learned this as soon as I arrived, what they were not aware of until last night, the night of the event, was that they were selling tickets, that Impact was selling tickets, which they were, to the Hall of Fame. The bar did not know that. And naturally, when they found out, they wanted a piece of that. Now, I don't know how that was resolved or anything like that, but I was, I mean, I guess I shouldn't have been shocked, but I was when I was told this. I'm standing there thinking, how do you not coordinate something like that with the venue? Like, you know, I've organized half a dozen events of my own little casual meetups. I mean, I've done, you know, some event planning with my day job as well, but just in terms of the podcast, I've organized half a dozen events of my own. I'm actually organizing event number 7 right now. And I make sure to always work with the venue to make sure that things are organized properly. Now, granted, I don't charge you guys for admission like they were doing last night, but if I did, I would make sure to alert the venue. That just seems like common sense to me. So when I got there, you know, I was there with Webmaster Mike. Shout out to Webmaster Mike and SE Scoops. When I got there, you know, he was already there waiting. The manager, he looked completely flustered as people were showing up. They were not letting anybody initially when we got there. They weren't letting anybody upstairs to where the ceremony was about to take place. Even though I paid for our tickets. You had to pay to get into this Hall of Fame thing. Now, whatever it was, I paid 20, what did I pay? 25, 30 bucks, something like that. But they had already been letting people upstairs because I guess the bar didn't know. There weren't security people there. There weren't security checking tickets. So they were letting everybody upstairs. And in fact, now that I think about it, they never bothered to check our tickets either. So sucks for me, I guess. Had I known that I could just waltz on in for free, believe me, I happily would have done so. I could have taken that 30 bucks and gotten myself 2 Jack and Cokes for that. That's like me spending $10 a month like a schmuck like I do for the WWE Network when tons of people just get it for free. What a great feeling that is, right? But Ed Nordholm was there. Don Callis was there. Scott D'Amore was there. A good part of the Impact roster. Josh Matthews, he was holding court as the master of ceremonies, and he looked like he'd been hitting the loggers a little early. I'll just say that. Now, maybe he was just very emotional to see his friend being inducted into the Hall of Fame. That is possible. But you can kind of tell when somebody's been loosening up a little bit. Even some of the wrestlers, we were sitting, you know, probably 4 rows in. We're just sitting amongst the wrestlers. Tessa Blanchard is sitting next to us. But like even some of the wrestlers, I like turned to look. I thought maybe I was the only one who realized this. And they were sort of, I don't know, they were laughing. It kind of felt like they picked up on the same vibe that I was. So look, I have no idea if he was bombed or not, but his eyes were so glassy I could practically see my reflection. And I was 4 rows back. Father James Mitchell, he did the induction. He was the perfect choice. To me, he was the only choice, really. It would be like having Paul Bearer, if he were still alive, inducting The Undertaker or Kane. There are just certain acts that are together for so long that it just makes sense that somebody like that would be the one to do the induction. Plus, I mean, for God's sakes, the guy was born with a voice to be a pro wrestler or a narrator or something. Now he sounds like he gargles concrete when he speaks, but even still, the guy's got an amazing voice. So he was the perfect choice to do the induction. He shared a lot of stories about what it was like when he was first put together with Abyss and being on the road with him. Abyss, during his speech, told actually a really funny story about, you know, wondering many years ago how Mitchell gets his eyebrows. Like, the guy literally looks like the living embodiment of the devil incarnate. And he's got those eyebrows that go up. And he couldn't figure out, how do you get your eyebrows to do that? And they were in Mitchell's, you know, truck riding to the next town. And he says to Abyss, he goes, you know, check my pocket or something like that. And he reached into his pocket and he pulled out a loaded gun. And Mitchell was like, oh, wrong pocket. He's like, here, see on the floor, reach down and grab that. And he picks up a glue stick, like the ones you would use in school. And so literally that was the trick. He takes a glue stick and he basically glues his eyebrows up, and that's how he was able to get them to look like that. So I thought that was amusing. But Abyss, you know, Abyss is just, he's just a nice guy. He comes across as the nicest guy in the world. He really comes across as somebody who I think would be an absolute asset to whatever company he's in. Obviously, he's older now. His body is very beat up. I mean, he's a hardcore wrestler, so you look at the punishment that he's put himself through. All the barbed wire and the thumbtacks. I mean, you know, what Mick Foley put his body through, this was similar. You know, in TNA for all those years, he was sort of that Mick Foley figure, you know, in the company. He was the one that was putting himself through hell at a lot of times to put other people over. I mean, he was NWA champion at one point. I think Abyss, they said, has held every major singles title in the company. So he had plenty of success, but you know, he worked with a lot of guys, and he would want to make them look good. He worked with everybody. He worked with Sting. He worked with Kurt Angle. He worked with Mick Foley. He was working alongside Hulk Hogan for a while. And it was nice because the video package they did for him, I got to say, was really A+. And I hope they played that on the live stream on Twitch that I guess they had last night, because it was really well done. They even had comments in there, current updated comments from Kurt Angle and from Mick Foley congratulating Abyss on going into the Hall of Fame. Nothing from Hogan or Sting, but Jeff Jarrett was also briefly featured. He had comments as well. The same Jeff Jarrett who is currently suing Anthem, so that was awkward. And he did get some boos when he first popped up on screen, although it wasn't Ed Nordholm, I don't think, starting the boos. But he thanked everybody Abyss did during his speech. It was just a really cool moment. You could tell how deeply it touched him. You could talk about the venue, and you can talk about Haha Impact, and how come he never went to WWE. And Mitchell told that story. Was it Mitchell? I don't know if it was... No, you know what? It wasn't James Mitchell. It might have been Scott D'Amore, who also said there was a point around 2006 or so where they thought that Abyss was gone. He was going up north. He was going to WWE. And there was a pay-per-view, and he showed up, and they, you know, had him make a surprise return, and they knew at that point that this guy was all in. He was like Mr. TNA. He was just very loyal to that company, probably more than he should have been. There was probably a lot of things... Yeah, there's been a lot of stories over the years of guys not getting paid or getting paid on time and a lot of the other political bullshit that was going on. He probably deserved better than he got, to be perfectly honest with you. It is kind of sad he never had the chance to get like a big run in WWE. But that was WWE's loss and TNA's gain. Now he's working even in a backstage capacity in a creative role, and he's a mentor to a lot of the younger talent. It was really cool to see him get all emotional, because you could tell how much it meant to him. This wasn't just a gimmick. This wasn't just, you know, hey, let's just have a quick little thing and it's not a big deal. You could tell to him it was a very big deal. For real. Legit. And so that was very cool. Austin Aries. Let's get into what happened here at the end. Austin Aries did show up. He showed up late. Quote unquote late. Took a seat in the front row right next to Abyss. Separated from Johnny Impact only by Abyss. Abyss was sitting between them. And as soon as the ceremony was over and Abyss wrapped up his speech, Aries, in an impromptu fashion, he got up, he grabbed the microphone, and yeah, Josh Matthews was being a little over the top with it, as far as his reactions and mannerisms to everything that was going on. But everybody else was playing it very straight, like, hey, what's going on here? Come on, this is, you know, not your time. And Aries was just very contrite, and he was almost sheepish, and he said some very nice things about Abyss, and then he transitioned into the whole thing that happened with Johnny Impact, because the two of them went back and forth on Twitter earlier in the week, and there were some very nasty things that were said on both sides. But Aries made a comment also about, you know, Taya being husky, and then he took the tweets down, and there was a big backlash against Aries for it. And people said, well, sounds like it was real, but it just went too far. Or, you know, is it a work? Is it a shoot? And so he said, I came here, I also wanted to apologize because there were some tweets that I made and I've taken them down and blah, blah, blah. And he mentioned, he goes, but then I saw that Johnny and Taya went on TMZ Live and they basically trashed me. And that's when the shit hit the fan. And pandemonium broke out and Johnny Impact, you know... He stood up and he was shouting. He wanted to go after Aries. He had to be restrained. I guess that's also where the live Twitch feed cut out. But this went on for several minutes after. They had to be pulled apart. They never came to blows. But there was plenty of cussing and trash talking going on. And Aries dropped about, you know, half a dozen F-bombs. Now, Johnny, he did throw a bag. I think it was the bag that Aries came in with. It might have been like a little backpack or purse or I don't know. But he chucked that thing across the bar. I think it hit somebody in the head. So that did happen. But anyway, I put the video of all this up on my Twitter. And I'm going to play it again for you when I put this clip up on YouTube. When I chop up the clips and I put them on the YouTube channel, I'll make sure I put the actual video in there at the end so you guys can see it. Now look, everyone, I couldn't believe on my timeline how many people still even this morning are chiming in, oh, was it a work, or that looked real, or, well, obviously that was a work. Which is funny when people say that, because if you know that it is, you wouldn't have that little twinge of doubt. You know, I could practically hear it in your tweets when you post them. This has gotten quite the reaction. This has worked out exactly the way that Impact wanted it to. This was all designed to promote their match tonight at Bound for Glory and get a buzz going, just like the tweets were. Now, look, tweets can get out of hand. Is it possible that they were tweeting things and it just escalated and it did get to a point where they had to be pulled back a little bit because they were getting a little too personal? Sure. I don't know that that's what happened here. I think everything from day one with this has been a work, but it's been a very well done work. They've been playing off this perception of Austin Aries as being a dick in real life, right? Those stories have been around for a long time. It's not too far off to think that Aries would behave this way. And clearly they've been playing off of that, and I think they've done a masterful job at it. And last night was no different. I just love that even today in 2018, as cynical as we can all be, right? And everybody thinks they know everything. Even to this day, they are still able to make you stop and go, was that real? Did that really just happen? Well, certainly this was not real, but that was real, right? I love that still happens even today, because it feels like, you know, kayfabe has been dead for so long, and it's hard to do, you know, in an age where news leaks and everybody thinks they know everything, and we hear about things that you never would have heard about, you know, 15, 20 years ago. It's hard to believably pull off something like that, and I feel like they did that last night. This was a classic pro wrestling angle, but if you needed any clarification on whether or not it was, you know, if it was on the up and up or not, I looked over to my left, and there's Ed Nordholm, right? Basically the owner of the company. As this was going on, and they're cursing, and they're, you know, they're destroying furniture and things, and there's Ed Nordholm off to the side with, like, a smile or a grin on his face, filming the whole thing with his smartphone. There are certain things, if you really watch closely, should have been a dead giveaway for you. And not just the way that Josh Matthews was acting either. Although maybe that was the loggers, I don't know. This was their version, I guess, of Conor and Habib coming off that last UFC show. And like I said, I think they did a good job with it. Now, when we were leaving, I went downstairs. I went to go use the men's room before we left. And I opened the door then to leave. There's Eli Drake. I'm like, all right, it's all yours. And as I'm walking out of the bar, here comes Aries. Now, Aries supposedly had been, pulled to the back and kicked out of the venue, but here he is. You know, he's got a drink in his hand, very casually, you know, strolling over to the bar. I guess that's his reward for a job well done. We'll see if it translates into buys for Bound for Glory. I think it may be too late for that, given that the event now is coming up tonight. Although online, it has gotten a lot of... There's been a lot of buzz for this online. The video that I put up got something already like 13,000 views or something. And my timeline, I woke up this morning, there were a shitload of messages. So they got people talking. This is something that Impact has not been able to do for a very long time. And maybe one of the reasons why they have just not been able to sort of, I don't know, it feels like they're in a rut right now. Not in terms of the product itself, which I hear people praising all the time. Oh, it's so much better. It's so good. Give it a chance. They just can't get any momentum going, it feels like. So it's smart for them to try something like this. And it did work. I just don't know if it'll, like I said, translate into buys for the pay-per-view, which is kind of the whole point of this. For me, though, it worked fine. Got me excited to see that match. So I just think also, and a lot of you guys said this, and I think it's an important point to make, that people are just so starved for this type of thing in WWE, or WWE is the only thing they watch, and so they don't see stuff like this. And when they do, they like it, and they think it's cool, right? Blurring the lines between fantasy and reality. So it was a breath of fresh air, I think, for a lot of people. But Bound for Glory is tonight. If you are listening to this before the show, it is tonight from the Melrose Ballroom in Queens, New York. Eli Drake is going to issue an open challenge to any New Yorker, any wrestler from New York. Now, when I interviewed Austin Aries at the House of Glory show, we had the chance to interview him briefly. Remember that a few months ago? Video's up on YouTube. He was doing an open challenge for the Impact title on that show. And he said, hey, you never know, the Solomonster. Maybe the Solomonster will answer the challenge. Well, my boots are in the shop, and they won't be ready until Monday, or else I would totally accept Eli Drake's challenge. But Really, I think they have a few options out there. You've got familiar names like Bully Ray and Tommy Dreamer they could go with. To me, that's old hat. We don't need more of that, right? We need something a little bit bigger than that. Now, I'm worried it could be Big Cass. I don't know that. I think that would probably go over like a fart in church, but who knows, right? It could be Big Cass coming out to accept the challenge. Chris Jericho is the name that a lot of people are floating. I like that idea, and I think there's a good chance of that happening. Jericho was actually born in New York, even though he was raised up north. He is a New Yorker. He was born in Long Island. And he's been rumored for this show anyway. Nothing's confirmed. And Jericho in the past has said that, you know, I'll do stuff with New Japan, but, you know, I won't work in the States for a company like TNA or anything because I don't want to go against Vince. I feel like things have changed where Jericho now is at a point where he just doesn't give a fuck and he'll go wherever he feels like he wants to go. He's not coming in for an extended run, I don't think, or anything, but could I see Chris Jericho make an appearance at Bound for Glory? If for no other reason to help promote his cruise, which is coming up in about 2 weeks, and that Impact is not sponsoring, but I think they're certainly promoting it. Yeah, I do. Absolutely. I think he'll do anything to promote that cruise. And so I think Jericho, very good chance he will be on the show. This would be a logical spot for it. If it was a one and done, then this is the perfect spot. He can come in, he could wrestle Eli Drake, he can beat Eli Drake. There's no shame in Eli Drake losing to Chris Jericho. And so that would be my pick if I had to make a prediction on that. We have Matt Sydal and Ethan Page taking on Rich Swann and Willie Mack. Ali battles Sue Young. Knockouts champion Tessa Blanchard, who was in the house last night. She takes on Taya Valkyrie. Eddie Edwards and Moose will go one-on-one. They were sitting beside each other last night at the ceremony. Sami Callihan teams with Jake and Dave Crist, OVE, against the X Division champion Brian Cage and the Lucha Bros, Pentagon and Phoenix. This is OVE rules, which basically means no rules. LAX and Conan against the OGs and King in a Concrete Jungle death match where there will be no ring mats. There will be no mats at all, even inside the ring. They're going to have the wooden boards exposed. No turnbuckle pads, so the steel will be exposed. Hence, Concrete Jungle. That's what they're calling it. And in the main event, Austin Aries defends his Impact World title against Johnny Impact. I think Johnny wins the title here. I was surprised. I watched Slammiversary, like I know a lot of you did. I was impressed. I thought it was a good show. And I was surprised to see Aries beat Moose. They were building Moose up like this was his coming-of-age moment, and he's going to win the championship, and then he didn't. And he got beat clean. Right in the middle by Aries. So that surprised me. I don't see that happening again. And like I said, they've been going at it on Twitter. They had the incident last night to help, you know, throw some more meat on the bone and you know, create a buzz going into this match. They've done all they can do. I will say that much. They've done about as much as you could possibly ask them to do to try to get some buzz going around this match. And tap into that hardcore wrestling fan base and hopefully get them to, if not buy a ticket, I think the event might be sold out tonight, but, you know, to buy the show, I guess it's airing on Fight TV. So I think Johnny wins the championship. Now, Impact is going to be taping television at the Melrose Ballroom, same venue, Monday night and Tuesday night as well. And speaking of TV, some bad news for Impact this week. Pop TV is moving the show to a different time slot. So it's staying on the same night, Thursday nights, but instead of 8 p.m. Eastern, starting on October 25th, the show is moving to 10 p.m. Eastern. So it'll go from 10 p.m., I guess, to midnight, which is not exactly, I would say, an ideal time. You know, for all this talk about how much better creatively the product has been recently, Impact has done some of its lowest ratings of the year. And maybe some of the lowest ratings in the history of the show on any network over the last few months. They've gone up and down, but they've been down a lot lately. And in fact, they just dropped again. They dropped by another 7,000 or 8,000 this past week going into the pay-per-view, which is not good. And to me, moving the show to 10 p.m. just sounds like a bad move. Now, it's not a bad move for Pop. They're moving the show for a reason. They're moving it because they obviously think they could do better with something else at 8 p.m. But for Impact, I think it's a terrible move. Now I can get into this crown jewel situation, which I know a lot of you have been asking me different questions about crown jewel, or as I call it, WWE Sweet Saudi Money 2, Electric Boogaloo. There were some big developments this week in terms of the card. among other things. But we'll start with the card itself. We'll start with the show itself. The show has been downgraded from the larger King Fahd International Stadium that fits about 68,000 people to the smaller King Saud University Stadium, which fits about 25,000 people. And that was a move that was made by the Saudis. Tickets apparently haven't even gone on sale yet. They just made the choice for whatever reason that this had to be moved to a much smaller venue. The Crown Prince over there loves nostalgia so much, maybe he called in a bomb threat to try to recreate WrestleMania 7, and he thinks that Sergeant Slaughter is appearing on the show. I don't know. But for the first time in 8.5 years, Shawn Michaels will come out of retirement to wrestle a match. Even though, for all intents and purposes, he kind of already did wrestle a match at Super Showdown. I mean, he was bumping around more than Triple H and The Undertaker were. But for the first time in 8.5 years, Shawn Michaels finally coming out of retirement. One of the few people to actually live up to his word and stay retired. All undone now. All undone. Now, if he's back for more than just a tag team match, fine. There are some potential, you know, dream matchups that Shawn Michaels could have, and I'm sure that even at 53 or whatever he is, he can probably still go out there and have one of the best, if not the best match on the card. You know, so if he's coming back to have a few matches here and there, you know, hey, that could turn out to be a lot of fun. If he's coming back just for a tag team match, then this is a colossal waste of time and a colossal waste of a perfectly good retirement. So I actually hope he is in for multiple matches and some singles matches, or else this is all just a waste. Now, they're also hosting on this show the first ever WWE World Cup tournament. AJ Styles is going to be defending the WWE Championship against Daniel Bryan. Roman Reigns is defending the Universal Championship against Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman. So they have loaded this show up with some big matches. Reason being, they were paid a fuck ton of money by the Saudi government for these shows. Could be as much as $250 million over the next 10 years. So they have loaded this card up. And it's a shame because they really need to cancel this show. So it's a shame that they've loaded it up so heavily. They've loaded up a show that really should not be happening. And before they did their first show there, the Greatest Royal Rumble, you know, I said that WWE is a business. And it would be very hard for them to turn down the amount of money that they are reportedly being paid for these shows. Tough thing to do. Now, I didn't know they were coming back for another show so quickly. I thought it was going to be a once-a-year thing, and then all of a sudden this show came from out of nowhere. But they are a business, right? And you got everybody, every American company, sports leagues, desperately trying to break into China. And you know, China has its own issues with human rights violations. I just got done the other day, actually, reading this story about these re-education camps that they have in China, which sound terrifying. You should look them up. It's horrifying to read about this. But this is the way of the world, right? This is where the money is. And so all these businesses, American businesses, other international businesses, they're trying to break into new markets. And China is one, and Saudi Arabia is another. And the Saudis are the ones being proactive about this. They're the ones that have created this initiative. They're trying to go out and just bring these, you know, Western businesses in, and they're trying to remake their own image. With China, I get the sense that everybody is sort of trying to break in there, and China just, they get to pick and choose, right, who they do business with. So, I would like to think that if it were me, I wouldn't be doing business with these people. It would be tough, I will say. It would be tough, but I would like to think that I would not be doing business with these people. That this is not a road that I would like to go down if I had my own company. But money talks. Well, things have changed a bit now. After this story, which I assume you've all heard about by now, and if you haven't, then you really need to read a newspaper. Or go watch the BBC. And just stay the hell away from all this cable news garbage that we have here in this country. Which is what it is. It's all freaking garbage. But a Washington Post reporter of Saudi descent, this guy Jamal Khashoggi, who fled Saudi Arabia last year to come here to the U.S. out of fear for his safety. He has been living for a while now in Virginia, and he had spoken critically, very critically, of the government over there for years. He was a progressive voice. He was caught on camera entering the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, to pick up some marriage documents that he was told he needed. He left his fiance in the car outside, and he never reemerged from the consulate. They show him walking in. He never came out. Now, Turkish officials, and Turkey is no fan of Saudi Arabia. Let's just mention that here. These two countries do not like each other. There is an issue there. But Turkish officials claim that he was murdered on orders from the highest levels of the Saudi government, allegedly, and none of this is confirmed yet. His death itself is not confirmed yet. There's been no body. There's been no confirmation that he is, in fact, dead. He is missing. He has been missing, I believe, was it since October 2nd, I believe this happened? It's been a few weeks he's been missing. But it is believed, the prevailing theory, is that the Saudis sent a team of up to 15 men, as many as 15 men, to Turkey, to the consulate. And that what happened is they may have tried initially to interrogate Khashoggi and kidnap him, and they were going to bring him back to Saudi Arabia. And then God knows what they would have done to him there. But something went wrong, and he ended up dead. Other stories say that he was killed after he entered the consulate, and Saudi agents dismembered his body with a bone saw, which would explain why nobody saw him come out. Now, since then, it's been revealed that Turkish authorities, they haven't released any of this yet, but everything leaks, so if they have something, I would suspect that at some point soon we're going to probably hear it or see it. But they claim to have audio and or video evidence confirming that he was in fact murdered. Apparently there's audio. He may himself, the reporter, may himself had suspected that something might happen, and he set his Apple Watch when he walked in to record. And the audio may be from his own watch. He may have recorded audio of his own death. Now, it is a horrible story. It is a horrible story, and it's a story really that is much bigger than WWE, right? It is much bigger than a stupid wrestling show. It's like when Ted Turner, came out with the news a few weeks ago that he had, Lewy body dementia. There were a couple of people who said, well, this is bigger than a wrestling story, you idiots. He's a huge figure in the media world. No shit, Sherlock. You don't think I fucking know that? I talk about these things in the context of a wrestling show. This is a wrestling podcast by and large. So obviously when I talk about stuff like this, I'm talking about it in a wrestling context. Go back under the rock you crawled out from. So in terms of a wrestling context, that is how I am coming at this here. Let me just make that clear. But this is a much bigger story than just WWE. But now you have multiple senators, Republican and Democrat, have come out publicly saying that WWE should, at the very least, if not cancel the show, they should pause their relationship until things are clarified. They should pause the relationship with Saudi Arabia. This is a very bad look for WWE right now. They got a lot of flack back in April for that first show, not flying any of the women over there, nor are they doing so this time. Hence why we are getting an all-women's pay-per-view 5 days before this show. We're seeing other American companies now pulling out of Saudi Arabia. Richard Branson, announced he's got more money than God, this guy. He came out and said that he was halting this billion-dollar investment project in Saudi Arabia until, this story was sorted out. So there was already heat on WWE for the first show, but now the heat is growing into an inferno. And WWE issued a very brief statement saying only, "We are currently monitoring the situation." That was the quote. What they're monitoring, of course, is the backlash that they're getting. And the potential backlash that may yet come unless they cancel this show. And I think that is exactly what they need to do. WWE needs to cancel Crown Jewel. Now, will they do that? People seem to be dismissing it. I got a lot of comments even on my timeline and people just saying, of course they're not going to. There's too much money at stake. Ha ha ha, they'll never do that. And to that, I would say you would be surprised that with enough pressure, public pressure, pressure from the right people, you would be surprised how quickly you can get somebody to change their mind. You know, on a very small scale, we see what happened with the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal. They came out, they publicly announced the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal, and boy, did that not go over well. And people figured out, hey, we ought to go to the sponsor. Let's go to the WrestleMania sponsor. Let's go to Mars, right? Since they own Snickers and all that. Let's go to them and complain. And what happened? WWE changed the name. It was no longer the Moolah Battle Royal. Boy, did they change their tune on that quickly. Now, that's a smaller example, but it just goes to show you that with enough pressure on the right people or sponsors or what have you, I don't care how much money is at stake, when it comes down to public image, this is a company that, believe me, you see it every week on television, this is a company that cares deeply about their public image. Maybe more than money, maybe more than anything else. They care about their image more than just about anything. Now, I think their goal right now, my guess is they want to try to get to November 2nd and just get through this. If it comes out that they did have, if like confirmation comes out that they did have this man killed or a body turns up, I mean, if the guy was dismembered with a bone saw, then there would be no body. But if that happens in the next 2 weeks, it's going to make WWE look absolutely horrendous if they don't pull out of the show. And frankly, even if that doesn't happen, even if nothing new comes out, there's no body, there's no other evidence. The Saudis certainly have not come up with any kind of plausible explanation for any of this. They just deny everything. But if, even if nothing else comes out between now and then, you know, look, people aren't stupid. You can put two and two together here in this story. Circumstantial, yes, but you can put two and two together, even in the absence of hard evidence. Just from a public relations point of view, it's too late. It's already too late. They have to pull out. You know, for an owner in Vince McMahon who puffs his chest out in support of the troops and says that in the XFL, I'm going to make sure that all of our players stand for the national anthem, though, the big patriot that he is. If he just puts his head down and acts like it's business as usual, then this company deserves all of the scorn and all of the backlash that they have coming to them. And if they do move forward with this show, and this is something that was disgusting the first time they did it, but if they do this show and they air that propaganda video putting over how progressive the Saudi regime is, how progressive the royal family is, and this young prince MBS or whatever the hell he calls himself, then WWE should win for most disgusting promotional tactic in the Observer Awards every year forevermore. I don't even know if Meltzer still does that award in his awards issue anymore. If not, he should bring it back. And he should give it to WWE for the rest of time. There is nothing progressive about plotting to murder one of your citizens and cut them up with a bone saw. Oh, but they let women drive now. Look at how progressive they are. I'm sure they aired that video back in April because it's part of the deal that they have with them. That's why I'm very curious to see how this is going to work out, not just whether they cancel the show, but let's say they move ahead with Crown Jewel. They're bound and determined, or they maybe legally they feel like we have to do this show, and then maybe we'll talk about pulling out of the agreement, but we got to do Crown Jewel. We have no choice. Of course, you always have a choice. But even if they do the show, it's possible that it's part of the agreement that they have to air that propaganda video, because that's the only reason this thing came about in the first place. This is part of a campaign by the Saudi government to remake their image on the world stage. Now, it probably just blew up in smoke with this story. I don't see how they can do that now. I think we're way past that point. But imagine after all this, not only if they do the show, but they have the gall to air another one of those videos. It is part of their propaganda campaign. And if WWE has the fucking audacity to agree to air another one of those videos on this show, they deserve to be mocked and ridiculed for the rest of their existence. Now I also see that Saudi Arabia is high on the list of places that WWE wants to build a new performance center. Ladies need not apply, I'm sure. Yeah, I have a few people, I want to say maybe three or four, that I know of. I mean, there could be more, but handful of people that I know of who listen to my show, have been fans of the podcast for years, who live in Saudi Arabia. They'll send in mailbag questions from time to time. And they're some of the nicest people. I've interacted with them. I've gotten along with them. They've sent in audio questions to the show. It's really cool to hear from people, you know, so far away in that part of the world who are part of this, you know, little wrestling bubble here. So I take pains not to paint everybody with a broad brush, right? And make it clear that what we're talking about here is the government, right? The royal family. That's what we're talking about here. It's the ruling class. If you choose to do business with people like that, there is a cost that comes along with that. WWE decided that it was a risk worth taking. The money was just too great. Well, now you got to deal with the consequences of that. And given everything that happened this week, it could not have come. This story could not have come at a worse time for them when they're in the middle of promoting this Saudi Arabia show. And you know what also sucks? You've got this Evolution pay-per-view 5 days, I think. There's 5 days before the Saudi Arabia show. All of the promotion, it feels like, hasn't been for Evolution. It's for the Saudi Arabia show. So if you want to get a real sense, because of course that's where the money is, right? If you want to get a real sense of how WWE feels about Evolution as compared to Saudi Arabia, why they're doing this Evolution show, and why they're doing it when they're doing it, you need not look any further than that. Look at all of the promotion and all these big matches and DX and the Brothers of Destruction. It's all about Saudi Arabia. Evolution is almost like an afterthought. And the shameful thing is now, for these next few weeks, I don't see the story just going away so quickly. All of the focus and attention now, when it should be on this, oh my God, it's amazing, first ever women's pay-per-view, right? They should be hyping this up to no end. All anybody is going to be talking about now is the stupid Saudi Arabia show. And not only that, but that should they cancel it, should they not cancel it? That shouldn't be the discussion going into a show. It should be a discussion about, wow, we're going to get Daniel Bryan against AJ Styles. We're going to get, you know, Brock Lesnar is back and is going to be a big triple threat. And, you know, DX is back for the umpteenth time here. And right, that should be what people are talking about. And all of that, and Evolution, all of it, it's all overshadowed now by this story. It's almost like an afterthought. So you have the horrible timing for WWE where this international incident happens, which is what it is, and it just puts the pressure squarely on their shoulders now. They've done a good job, WWE has, over the years, of rebranding themselves as this mainstream company that everybody from car companies to cancer charities want to do business with. They've wiped away the stain, largely, that was left on them and wrestling in general after the Benoit tragedy. That was a dark time. I mean, that whole story was dark. But coming off of that, it took a long time for the wrestling business to really, I feel like, recover just image-wise, if nothing else, from that whole story, that horrible, awful story. And they have rebounded from that. Oh, they're a PG company now. Look at all the philanthropy they do, right? They've carefully crafted this image for themselves, and now it's going to be very telling what they choose to do. I don't see this deal lasting the full 10 years anyway. I said this to Webmaster Mike. We were talking last night at the Impact Hall of Fame. This is a 10-year deal. There's no way this thing is lasting 10 years. This thing was never going to last 10 years. 10 years is a long time. A lot can happen in 10 years. Look at what's already happened, and we're not even a year into this deal. Got Bret Hart signed a 20-year deal with WWE, and look what happened there. So believe me, a lot can happen in that time. The question is it worth it? They're going to have to ask themselves that question. Is it worth it? Is it just about, well, the stockholders are going to want us to keep the deal, or we can't give up all this money, and that's the most important thing, and that's all that matters? They're going to have to make that decision. Is it worth all of the bad press? Is it worth selling your soul if the Crown Prince says you must air this video during your show, touting how progressive we are, and I want Yokozuna and the Ultimate Warrior and Diesel on these shows? I mean, they're like the puppet masters pulling the strings. Vince is like a marionette puppet. It's pathetic. You know, we all make choices in life. Keeping the women at home was a choice they made. They decided that was acceptable, and they went over there. Acting as a ceremonial spokesperson, a government spokesperson, by pushing their political agenda, That, to me, though, is a bridge too far. It's one thing to do the show, but to go out of your way as part of this agreement to air video or talk on commentary, like, that is, it's just a bridge too far. Because when you air that sort of thing, you're endorsing it. That's what you're doing. WWE, they don't get to pull the old, like, you know, retweets do not equal endorsements tag that you see, like, a lot of journalists have that in their Twitter bios because they almost have to make it clear that if I retweet something, that doesn't mean I'm endorsing it. They don't get to pull that card here in a matter of speaking. That's kind of what I think they're hoping to do. They don't get to do that. WWE does not get away with doing that. They might like everybody to think that, but that's not how this works. It's time for them to pull the plug on this show. You know, months ago, they could hide behind the idea of, look, they're changing. They're becoming more progressive. We believe them. And we would like to do business with them. Now, can't hide behind that anymore. And you say, well, what are they going to do? They have such big matches. Shawn Michaels already came out and announced that he was coming back. You can't just cancel the show and cancel his comeback. It's very simple. You've got another pay-per-view coming up a few weeks later. It's a little event called Survivor Series. Now, I'm sure they already have in their plans, they have plans for certain matches at Survivor Series. Well, you know what? The top matches that you were planning for at Crown Jewel, AJ and Bryan for the championship, the triple threat. I don't know what, you know, you might have to rework your deal with Brock Lesnar, but the triple threat and DX against the Brothers of Destruction. There's no reason you can't take those three matches and shift them over to the Survivor Series card a couple weeks later. No reason at all why you can't do that. That would be very easy to do. And then you'd have to rework other aspects of the card. So you wouldn't be able to do the World Cup. Oh my God, what a huge loss. Because there were already rumors of a Team Angle against Team Corbin match. You know, Kurt Angle already being one of the people who's qualified for this World Cup tournament. And so, you know, you might have to rework a few things there. It doesn't seem like it would be overly difficult. Just because Shawn Michaels doesn't come back in Saudi Arabia doesn't mean he can't come back 2 weeks later in some other city. Frankly, if he's coming back, he should be coming back here anyway. So that, to me, that's a non-starter. That's an easy enough thing to do. I want to talk about the talent here for a second. That's what I want to talk about, because there was a report that came out a couple days ago. I think it was Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer Live. He was credited with this report. And, you know, he claimed that the wrestlers that were scheduled to fly to Saudi Arabia, many of them do not want to go. They do not want to go. He's, you know, they could tell that, you know, the people who are scheduled to go to Saudi Arabia, of that contingent, maybe not all of them, but a good portion of them, a majority of them, secretly, do not want to go to Saudi Arabia. But they have shareholders to answer to, and these are big money deals, and so that's where things stand right now. Well, if that is true, and I don't doubt that it would be, it's not that hard to believe that there are certain wrestlers on that roster who really don't have any interest in going to Saudi Arabia. You know, but they put their head down and they go anyway, like good little soldiers. So I don't doubt that there's probably a lot of truth to that. And you know what? If that is true, this would be an awfully good time for those wrestlers, for that talent to come together and go public with that sentiment. It's all about strength in numbers. Yes, it would not be very smart for Kofi Kingston on his own, or Kofi Kingston and Curtis Axel to band together and to go public and say, we don't feel comfortable going to Saudi Arabia, we're not going to go. Not that, you know, Curtis Axel would even be on the show. That would be very dumb. There's a smart way to do things and there's a stupid way to do things. That would be very dumb. I agree. But there's strength in numbers here. Plus, you know, the whole independent contractor issue. Don't even get me started on that. They are, after all, independent contractors, are they not? Should they not have a choice in whether or not they go over there? Don't get me started on that whole farce. But boy, you know, WWE talent, we've seen it in just the last few months. Boy, are they quick to band together in unity and jump on people when the opportunity presents itself. That whole Dave Meltzer debacle with the comment about Peyton Royce, what a shit show that turned into. What an embarrassment that turned into. Not for Meltzer either. Although at least he admitted at least that, you know, to whatever it was that he did, he felt badly that people took it the way they took it. But looking at everybody, all the WWE people ganging up on him. You talk about mob mentality. What happened there was a freaking embarrassment. But boy, it sure seemed like a coordinated effort to me. I don't know if it was officially coordinated or not. It may have just been a case where, hey, you know, they attacked one of our own and, you know, we're all like one big happy family. And if you attack a member of our family, we're going to attack you back. We're going to counterpunch. Maybe it was that. But boy, they all came together in a show of unity because this guy made a comment that was taken the wrong way about a female wrestler. You would think that this guy was Pol Pot. You would think that this guy was some third world dictator who had done horrible things and burned bodies or something. So when they want to come together, clearly they can. We've seen that. And I'm sure there's other examples that you can come up with as well. When they have a reason and a purpose to come together publicly about something and band together, all this talk about you'll never have a wrestler's union. Jim Ross used to make the comment, you can't get wrestlers in a room to agree on what to have for lunch. You're never going to get them in a room to agree on conditions for a union. You're never going to have a wrestling union. And he's not wrong. He is probably right. Especially now, WWE, with all the money, they're flush with cash. The talent in that company probably get paid very well. I think there's less and less of a reason in that respect for them to even want to unionize, because if they have a comfortable life and they're making good money, then why rock the boat? So if it hasn't happened by now, I agree, it is probably never going to happen. But for all that talk about stuff like that in the past, right, wrestlers coming together, boy, you know they should do that. Well, here's your chance. If there are enough people who truly feel that way and do not want to go to Saudi Arabia for whatever, maybe their political beliefs, maybe they just legitimately feel unsafe, whatever it may be, this is the time for them to publicly come together and not, you know, bash the company they work for, but put together a very organized statement. We just saw this a few months ago with some of the talent on the roster. Hulk Hogan had that big backstage meeting, and there were different reports that came out about how certain talents felt about it. Some of the African-American stars, they came out, they put their own statement out, independent of WWE. New Day made a statement. Kofi, Titus O'Neil made a statement. We can't just forgive and forget with Hulk Hogan. I mean, it was, you know, a pretty, honestly, it was a pretty monumental thing in some ways for them to do that, because it's not often that you see or hear talent from WWE speak kind of on their own, out of turn like that. It was kind of refreshing, but there were only two or three people who made comments? You don't think there were other people in that meeting who felt the same way? Who felt that they couldn't come out publicly and say something, so they didn't? But we saw some people do it. Why can't you have a decent number of guys come together and literally sign on to one statement, put their name on one unified statement that's, and however you want to phrase it, if they feel unsafe, if they feel it's against their values and their beliefs, we don't feel comfortable, whatever it is, there's a respectful way to do something like that, but you need the numbers to do it. Because if you have 15 different people sign on to a statement saying, we don't want to go to Saudi Arabia, we're not going to Saudi Arabia, and here's why, what's WWE going to do? They're going to fire those 15 people? They're going to de-push those 15 people? The key is that you need at least one big name. I agree absolutely 100%. You need at least one big name to step up and speak out. Because if it's a bunch of mid-card guys and lower-card guys, it ain't going to mean shit. You need a Randy Orton or a John Cena or an AJ Styles or someone of that ilk to step up. At least one, to join together with all the other guys, and together, publicly, they can come out and go ahead and express yourselves. If that's what's going on here and that's how you really feel, then speak up. Don't tuck your tail between your legs. I don't expect one person to go out on a limb, because yes, it could cost them their push, it could cost them their job, they could be branded a certain way. You get 10, 12, 15 people, though, including one or two big names. Well, now you're putting the company up against the wall. They're going to have no choice at that point but to put the kibosh on the show, because what are they going to do? They're going to have to react. This is a company that only reacts when it comes to public things like this. Maybe they could do it quietly. Maybe if internally they have a meeting and there's enough people, maybe they could do something privately to convince the company to go ahead and cancel the show. But if not, then you know what? Step up to the plate for a change. Because we've seen before in the past that, you know, you guys can do that when you want to, when you're motivated enough to come out and speak out publicly against somebody or pile on somebody. Boy, Now, how many wrestlers have we seen recently, including on their roster, Goldust and a few other people come out, Road Dogg, Goldust, whoever? Boy, they don't hesitate to make comments about the fans. And in some cases, they've come out pretty hard against the fans, too. So we've seen them do that before. They have a voice. Well, they should use that voice. Use that voice for a change. But this is a bad situation for this company to be in. It is not out of the realm of possibility this show could get canceled. I mean, if it's me, I think there's a 60-40 chance this thing gets canceled. Despite all the money that's on the line here, like I said, their image, their public image is as important to them as anything else. Because it's crafting that image that has gotten them in with new advertisers and other groups that otherwise they never would have been partnered with before. That image is so important to them. And it could all come crumbling down if they don't take action real soon. Because I don't see the story going away so fast. Maybe WWE ought to worry less about their women's evolution and start worrying more about their own evolution. Raw last Monday in Chicago was a better effort than they've given us in recent months. I think the bar has just been set so low. I don't know if this is the start of actual momentum or just a one-time thing, but it felt like some big things happened on this show. The nostalgia was there, but they kept it to a minimum. It was pretty much limited to the opening segment. We got a really fun segment with Kurt Angle coming back, a very good main event that gave us our first small glimpse of a possible rift, a possible issue between Drew McIntyre and Braun Strowman, and also McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler as well. They were, you know, the key there being that Drew McIntyre seems to be poised as somebody who is going to break out soon on his own. I would say as a big babyface would be ideal, but given how few top heels they have on this show, he has more people to feud with as a heel. You know, he could feud with Seth Rollins and win the Intercontinental title, or he could feud with Roman Reigns at some point and challenge him for the Universal Championship, and I'm sure, you know, probably lose to him, but, you know, still, you can go with either one of those feuds, and I think he could, you know, be a good fit for that. But even the Bellas on this show, even the Bella Twins, they went heel by attacking Ronda Rousey, which was predictable, but with all of the Bella hate, it makes more sense, I think, to play off that by turning them heel, which I didn't think they would do. I thought in the end, you know, maybe they would tease it, but they have the reality show stuff, and I didn't know if they had the guts to do it. And I was happy to see them just go full out. This was, there was no ambiguity about it. This was a full-on heel turn here, and they, you know, were booed, and the fans reacted the way that you would expect them to. But it just, like I said, felt like a lot of big things happened on this show. It felt important, which is something I cannot say for this show most weeks anymore. That feeling is long gone. This show, long as it may be, is largely forgettable. If you miss an episode and you pick up with it a week or two or even a month later, I don't think you get the sense that you really missed all that much. And so that's the best compliment about this show that I can pay. It felt a little more important, at least. Doesn't mean it was a great show overall, because it wasn't. Only that I found more to enjoy than I usually do. And there are a few things that you can go back, if you have not already done so, and check out on YouTube. They made it official this week, as I said earlier, Shawn Michaels is coming out of retirement. He was out there with Triple H, and they were talking about being on the long flight home from Australia, thinking, you know, 8.5 years in retirement out of respect. A respect that never really existed. So they issued a challenge to Undertaker and Kane for a match at Sweet Saudi Money 2, Electric Boogaloo. And did their DX shtick. So they're back as D-Generation X. This is not just Shawn Michaels and Triple H. This is DX. DX rides again. Because nothing screams cool more than two 50-year-olds pointing at their crotch, telling people to suck it like a bunch of anti-authority thugs. One of whom, by the way, anti-authority thugs, is billed as the chief financial officer of the company. This is the first DX return since Triple H has been COO on TV. Doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel right. And I'll tell you what, I'll say this much also. The crowd, they reacted to this, but not the way that I expected them to. You know, they were in Chicago, too. Chicago is one of the best wrestling cities. Chicago is one of the few, like, major cities I still have on my list I haven't been to. So hopefully at some point I'll make my my way out there. But Chicago's a great wrestling city. You ask a lot of wrestlers which city they like the most. A lot of them are going to say Chicago. They're usually very vocal and very energetic. And they did not react to this the way that I expected them to. You know, for the big announcement that Shawn Michaels, one of the all-time greats, is finally coming out of retirement after all these years and all those chants of one more match. I don't know. I expected a bigger reaction than what he got here. This just felt very underwhelming. It just felt like his return was not done the justice that I would have hoped, if that day ever came, that it would have gotten, you know? Now imagine if it was, let's say he was coming back against a fresh face, a younger face, a new face, that he's never wrestled before, and I in my mind, the way that I envisioned Shawn Michaels coming back if he ever was to come back, which is why I got excited when the rumors were floating around last year about him and AJ Styles at the Royal Rumble at the Alamo Dome. What I envisioned was something similar to what we saw in 96 with Bret Hart and Steve Austin. Bret Hart had been semi-retired at that point and not seen really since WrestleMania 12 when he lost the championship to Shawn Michaels, ironically. And it was Steve Austin who was talking shit about him on TV for weeks and weeks and weeks, trying to coax this guy out of retirement. One of the all-time great promos was on that one pay-per-view. I think it was that, was it that Ground Zero? Not Ground Zero. It was, there was an In Your House show in September of 96. It might have been the Mind Game show. And there was a promo segment with Brian Pillman, Steve Austin, and Owen Hart. And that was the promo where Austin said, if you put the letter S in front of the word Hitman, you have my exact thoughts of Bret Hart. And I thought, what a great fucking line that is. But he was taunting Bret for weeks until finally they did the whole thing where the company legitimately did not know if Bret was going to leave to go to WCW. And you know, when he went out on live TV that night, Vince McMahon knew, but he went out and he said, I'm staying right here, and I signed the new 20-year deal with the company. And he ended up accepting Steve Austin's challenge, and they had a match, and they ended up having this great feud with each other that led to, you know, one of the all-time great matches in company history. But I envisioned something similar where it would have to be somebody who coaxes Shawn Michaels out of retirement. And I don't know what they do or what they say to get him to agree to come out of retirement, but you build it up over a period of months. And then finally he can take no more and he accepts the challenge. And again, it would be whether it's a Samoa Joe or whoever, you can plug whoever you want in there. That, to me, would have been the way to do a Shawn Michaels return. And then you have him come out to fight for his pride or fight for his family or whatever. That, to me, would have been really cool. You know, he cuts this impassioned promo, accepting it. The crowd goes wild. That just didn't happen here. It's like, you know, hey, this thing happened. We got beat up by the old guys at Super Showdown and, you know, Triple H, are you ready? And, you know, there they are doing the freaking DX sign. I'm like, oh, okay, 8.5 years later, that's how Shawn Michaels makes his comeback. All right, I guess that's the best they could come up with here. So they did a double turn also on this show. They had Lashley and Kevin Owens, and they did a double turn, which is a welcome change, I think, for Bobby Lashley. Leo Rush was out there providing ringside commentary for the match. He had a headset mic on, and Vince McMahon was feeding him lines, and he was so annoying that I muted my television. So if that was the goal, then congratulations. They accomplished it. It definitely turned him heel for me, but I couldn't stand it. He was so fucking annoying to listen to that I had to mute the TV. And I had it on in the background, and I turned around, and I saw that there was a commotion, and he was, you know, slamming Kevin Owens' leg into the post, and I said, oh, that looks interesting, and I unmuted it and watched the rest of it. So Owens wrestled the match, though. You know, I went back and watched the full match. He wrestled the match like a babyface. He even pulled out a cannonball dive out of the ring that got a big pop. Lashley won. Owens was selling a knee injury, and Lashley worked over both legs. Crowd booed. Apparently, the decision to do the turn was only made that day. They made the decision that afternoon that they were going to turn this guy heel. I guess they realized Kevin Owens is hurt. He's going to be out for a while, and they felt like they might be a little short on the heel side, so they felt we had to do this. Owens is having knee surgery. He's going to be out for a while. How long exactly is not yet known. They won't know the extent of the damage until they go in. It could be 3 months, as little as 3 months, or it could be as much as 8 months, which makes it all the more baffling to me why they did an I quit angle with this guy, where he had that great match with Seth Rollins, and then he quit. And he walked out, and he was back on television like nothing happened the very next week. And it just is baffling to me. If they knew about this injury, my sense is that this is not an injury that just creeped up this week. They've known about this for a while. It is just absolutely baffling to me that they would do an angle like that and just bring the guy back the very next week. And now he's going to be gone possibly for 6 or 8 months. I mean, I guess maybe they felt they needed him for the Australia. Did they really need him for the Australia show? Was it that important for him to be there? You do an angle where the guy quits and then have him back the next week. I'm still floored by that whole thing. Ronda Rousey and the Bella Twins beat the Riot Squad. Bad match. Let me just say this. And I know the Bella fans are going to be all up in arms about this, but it has to be said. Since they've come back, I have yet to see the Bellas in anything resembling a good match. I know that that's not the most important metric to this company. The Bellas have value in so many other ways. But it would be nice if they could keep up with the other women on the roster, because they have a lot of very talented women. And when I watch them, and then I watch this, there really is no excuse for it. Now, I would say Nikki is far superior to Brie as an in-ring performer. But there has been absolutely nothing impressive about either one of them since they came back. After the match, the Bellas attacked Ronda Rousey. They beat her down. This got good heat. You know, again, if they want to do Ronda and Nikki, it's going to get good heat. I can see why they would want to do that match. I just wish that, you know, they weren't so focused on that as the main event of this Evolution pay-per-view. Which it is, at least according to Nikki Bella it is. She was at a Comic-Con event in Chicago this week, and she basically said that they were headlining. The updated Evolution card, by the way, has Ronda and Nikki for the Raw Women's title because, well, I guess just because. So she gets a championship match. And Lita will now team up with Trish Stratus. As opposed to doing two singles matches, it will be Lita and Trish as a team against Alexa Bliss and Mickie James. They have merged the two matches together, which I said, you know, something that I thought they should consider many weeks ago. I said that. Just put the two matches together and make it a tag. I thought it made sense because Trish and Lita, the idea of Trish and Lita as a team is a nice attraction. I don't know how many years it's been since they were a team, if they were ever a team. Plus, Alexa and Mickey, I mean, they've been partners anyway, so why not just make it a tag team match? Just made sense. We're also 2 weeks away from this Evolution pay-per-view. And forgetting all of the focus, of course, being on the Saudi Arabia show and how it's completely overshadowing what they wanted everybody to think was this monumental show for the company. You would never know it the way they've been promoting it. But we're 2 weeks away. There is nothing on this Evolution show for Asuka. There is nothing on this Evolution show for Sasha Banks. Now, Sasha has supposedly been dealing with some sort of minor injury. She is due back on the road next week, so she is okay. If they end up having nothing for either one of them on this Evolution show, whether it's a match or anything, then they're doing it wrong. This company is doing it wrong. Speaking of Asuka, there was a news item credited to PW Insider this week regarding Asuka and her standing on television right now, which is not great, and that because she doesn't speak English as well as they would like for her to, they being, well, we know who we're talking about here, Vince McMahon is therefore not apt to push her as hard as people would like because he feels like, well, she can't cut promos. You need to be able to cut good promos. Otherwise, we're not going to do anything with you. So right now, she is mired in just mid-card nothingness on SmackDown. Teaming with Naomi, wrestling the Iconics. Not doing much of anything else. This is what they're doing with Asuka. And people have said, well, just give her a manager. Problem solved. Let's have somebody speak for Asuka. She doesn't need a manager. She didn't need a manager in NXT, and she doesn't need a manager on the main roster. It's very easy to say, make her a Paul Heyman girl. I don't know that Paul Heyman is even interested in managing anybody anymore. Not after what happened with Curtis Axel and Cesaro and what a fail that was. Now, could it work? Could I see a Heyman-Asuka combo working? Absolutely. But it's not necessary. Not everybody needs to be out there cutting 10-minute promos. You know, Goldberg's strong suit was not going out and cutting 10-minute promos. There were a lot of people comparing Asuka's streak to Goldberg. Goldberg even congratulated her. She had passed a certain point. She might have passed him with her streak. And even Goldberg on Twitter, I remember, chimed in and congratulated her, and because there were a lot of comparisons made between those two. Now, obviously, I mean, Goldberg was a much bigger star. I'm not comparing them in that way, but there are certain people, when they have something that just makes them who they are, and in Goldberg's case, it was just, you know, there was an explosiveness about him. He came out, he speared Jackhammer, went and hit the showers, and people loved it, and they ran with it. They didn't say, oh, well, we got something with this Goldberg guy. I know, let's have him go out on television next week, and we'll open the show with a 20-minute promo. That's what people want. WCW, for all of their faults and all the fuck-ups and things we could talk about with that company, there were a few things they got right. Goldberg was the one big thing they got right. They knew exactly how to book that guy. Now, they got to a point where they ended the streak, and maybe they shouldn't have ended the streak so early. We can have a whole debate about that. But they played to the guy's strengths, and it paid off in dividends for them. When Asuka had her streak in NXT, she spoke. It's not like she was a mute. But she said only what she had to, and she had her own way of saying it. She has a certain charisma to her. She said only what needed to be said, and nothing more, and it worked. And people who say, well, it won't work with the mainstream audience, Salamonster, that's NXT, this is SmackDown. That is a cop-out bullshit answer, and you are as responsible for this shit as they are, if you use that argument. You play to the person's strengths. You hide or minimize their weaknesses. WWE seems to go out of their way sometimes to shine a light on people's weaknesses. Like they enjoy it. Like it's a challenge. And then to make them look even dumber, they'll let the camera linger on them for an extra 10 seconds just to make them look even more stupid. How many times have we seen that? Just book smart. She's a talented woman. She's done this for a long time now. She knows what works and what doesn't. She's a pro. She even knows how to work within your little system. For all the time she spent in NXT, she knows where to look for the camera. She knows how to play to the camera. She knows all of this already, and she can work, believably work, as an ass kicker. And she's got charisma, she's got personality, and she comes out with those robes. You know, I said once, she's like a Japanese version of Macho Man, only with lady parts. Macho Man would come out wearing those, like, really gaudy, vibrant robes. She's got all of that. Everything you would look for in a pro wrestler, she's got it all. But she can't talk the way that everybody else talks. So let's send her out there to dance, and let's make fun of her accent. WWE has proven that when they want to, they know how to use Asuka. Triple H did. They kept her strong in NXT. They kept her as strong as you could possibly keep someone. Even after she came to the main roster, she won the first ever Women's Royal Rumble match. She won! She challenged for the championship at WrestleMania. It's not like they haven't done anything with her. But we know they can do this. Which is why it is so frustrating when I read reports like this. Or I see some of the stuff I see on TV with my own two eyes. And here I see with 2 weeks to go, Asuka doesn't even have a match for the Evolution pay-per-view. Now, hopefully they'll rectify that this week, but it shouldn't have taken this long. You know, Triple H did an interview with the UK Sun this week where he admitted that he does not believe that Vince McMahon, after all these years, has ever watched a single episode of NXT from start to finish. He's seen bits and pieces. He's definitely aware of certain things that are going on. And I understand, I don't expect Vince McMahon to sit in front of his couch with a bag of popcorn and watch NXT every single week. But that was startling to hear, that he doesn't believe, to his knowledge, unless Vince is secretly doing this on his own, he doesn't think the owner of the company, the guy who is still deeply involved with talent decisions and the booking and handling of talent on the main roster, a lot of that talent is coming from NXT. The majority of that talent now comes from NXT. And Vince McMahon has never, ever watched a full episode of the NXT television show. Why am I not surprised? He says Vince is too busy. So the next time you wonder why, whether it's Asuka or someone else, how could things go so well in NXT and flop so badly on the main roster? Yeah, you know what? Sometimes it is on the talent. The Bobby Roode thing, I mean, that bothers me too. And I mean, I don't know why he was brought up as a baby. I just cannot for the life of me understand why he was brought up as a babyface. and why, as long as he's now been on the main roster, he's still a babyface. Only now does it look like they're finally working towards a heel turn. Finally. But he never should have come to the main roster in the first place as a babyface. You know, it's like they got to break you down first and then try to build you back up. Whoa, they're our little pet project now. Let's break them down to nothing. And then we'll try to build them back up. But you know what? I don't put all of that on the company with Bobby Roode. Part of the blame, I think he shoulders that. Because sometimes when they put you in a certain role and they give you something, you got to make the most of it. Bobby Roode has been just dull as dishwater since he's come to the main roster. And I can't put all of that on WWE. He gets some of the blame too. So yeah, sometimes it is on the talent. That is true. But what about all those other times? How could there be such a disconnect from the way someone is used from one show to the other? It's the same company. But I want you to remember that quote. I want you to remember that Vince McMahon has never watched a single episode of NXT. Then it all becomes clear. Maybe we should be grateful that he doesn't watch. Maybe he needs to be kept away from NXT. But, you know, Becky Lynch claims that she's been working with a cracked jaw, which apparently is a legitimate injury. She may have suffered the injury in her match at Super Showdown, and there's question now as to how serious the injury is. Is it worse than expected, and is she going to have to vacate the SmackDown Women's Championship? I hope not. I sure hope not. She's on the best run of her career right now. That would suck for her. But if we find out this week that she is seriously hurt, and she does have to vacate the belt before Evolution, I can think of one person on that roster who's got nothing going on and has no role on this show. Maybe it's time for a WrestleMania rematch. Charlotte against Asuka for the vacant championship. There's a match worthy of headlining the Evolution card. I hope Becky can go, but they've got a bullet in the chamber if they choose to use it. Baron Corbin, he came out on Raw. He was surrounded by a group of jobbers with various international gimmicks, and this was a battle royal to qualify for a spot in the World Cup. And now, mind you, the point of the World Cup, as we've been told, is to crown the best in the world. That's the whole purpose of this tournament. The purpose of this World Cup tournament at Crown Jewel is to determine the best in the world. Now, mind you, this tournament will not include either of the company's top champions. But the winner of this will be the best in the world. Remember that. One of the participants was dressed in the old conquistador costume. And if you looked at the guy's standing posture, you knew right away who it was. Actually, I knew who it was the minute they showed the back of his neck. There is not a man alive with a neck like Kurt Angle. His neck looked like it's about to give birth. That should have been a dead giveaway for who it was. Conquistador Angle, he decided to hang out outside the ring. When the bell rang, he left, and he just sat outside for the duration of the match, and he said, I want no part of this. And so finally, Corbin was left all by himself. He thought he had won. Angle comes, now he sees Angle on the outside. He realizes there's still one man left, and he goes to chase after him, and you know, the Conquistador rolls into the ring, and he's sort of taunting Corbin. Corbin comes in, he starts hitting German suplexes, and then he does jumping jacks. He hit an Angle slam, and at that point the crowd knew, so they came alive. Kurt was out there doing forward roll. I fucking lost it when he started doing that. He's doing forward roll. I didn't know the guy had it in him. The way he stands and the way he walks, he's out there doing forward rolls. Like he's back in wrestling, training 20 years ago. I laughed my ass off when I saw him do that. If you couldn't have fun watching this, you probably are not very fun on dates. I enjoyed the hell out of this. This was just classic, like, old school something you would see. I just thought it was very well done. And the Angle stuff just cracked me up. He clotheslined Corbin out of the ring. They played some salsa music until finally he unmasked and revealed that it was Kurt Angle. Now, on his Instagram, Kurt took a picture. Now, maybe he just took a picture at the building before he left. But he took a picture of himself wearing the mask and the costume. I guess, you know, he wanted everybody to think they let him take it home with him. And the caption underneath was, role-playing with this gem tonight with the wifey. Los Conquistador visits Mrs. Angle. And then he put the hashtag, it's true. Well, technically it would be El Conquistador. See, if I learn nothing from my 6 years of Spanish in school, I think I know the difference between singular and plural. That may be all I know, but I know that. But yes, Kurt Angle, role-playing with his wife in a gold conquistador costume is not the visual that I needed during my lunch break on Tuesday, but there it was. John Cena, by the way, is also in this World Cup because Cena's a free agent, and free agents get free entry into things like the World Cup, I guess. For the sixth consecutive week, we had some form of Bobby Roode and Chad Gable against The Ascension. I'm almost positive I've seen a Black Mirror episode with this storyline. This is horrifying. It's like you're just trapped in this world that you cannot get out of. If that isn't a Black Mirror episode, I don't know what is. And again, as we've seen before, Bobby Roode had the match won. He had it well in hand. Gable blind tags himself in. And he pins Victor after the chaos theory. Roode is just out there looking perplexed by this. AOP comes out. They beat the shit out of them. I'd like for AOP to beat the shit out of whoever is booking this. Can they do that? I'd like for them to do that. Just turn this guy already. For the love of God, enough with this. They should be in the ring next week. Here's what I would do. They're in the ring next week. There's a mystery tag team that the two of them are going to face. We don't know who it is. And then the Ascension's music hits, and Bobby Roode snaps. He absolutely loses it, and he kills everyone. And there's your heel turn. Or maybe it's a babyface turn if he does that. I don't know. But this has to end. This just has to end. I can see where it's going. I can appreciate that they're trying to drag this story out. They have to. They have weeks of television. How are we going to fill television? Boy, wouldn't it be nice if they put them in the ring with somebody else? Is there no other team for them to face? What's the B team up to? What are they doing? Oh, I remember. They're beating the Revival. That's what they're doing. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Please continue. Main event. I'm getting hot now. Main event was a rematch from Super Show. Maybe I didn't like the show as much as I thought I did. Main event was a rematch from Super Showdown with the Shield challenging the Dogs of War, or whatever the hell they're calling themselves. In Australia, it was Dean Ambrose. He scored the win for his team, so this time he ate the pin. Drew McIntyre pinned him with the Claymore kick. This was a really good match. This was, I would say, it's about on the level as their first one. Same level. After the match, Ambrose walked out on his teammates, leaving intrigue as they went off the air. Whether or not this meant Ambrose was walking away from the Shield. They have telegraphed this thing so much at this point. I mean, I guess it could still happen. He could still turn on Rollins or Reigns. I just really wish they didn't telegraph it quite this much. They really want you to think that he's going to leave the Shield, and intuition would tell you that that probably means that it will be somebody else leaving the Shield, or something completely different will happen. But I do think, you know, Ambrose would absolutely benefit from a heel turn at this point. And he's got two guys right there who he can feud with over the next 6 months if they wanted to go down that road. SmackDown Live was in Indianapolis, the home of WrestleMania 8, one of my all-time favorite WrestleManias. They opened the show with Charlotte and Becky Lynch for the women's title in a rematch from Super Showdown. That match had ended by DQ. And so the stipulation here was that if Becky got herself disqualified, as she did down under, that she would lose the championship. So it wasn't no DQ, but it was no DQ for Becky. That was the stipulation. And they had a good match. So what it led to instead of a DQ was a countout. They did a double countout finish, which I'm sure now leads to a big stipulation match at Evolution. Last woman standing seems to be the rumor going around, assuming that her cracked jaw is not as bad as people are saying it may be. Hopefully Becky's jaw is okay, because it sounds like there may be more to that, and if that's the case, that's not going to be good for her. But after the match, Charlotte speared Becky through the LED boards on the SmackDown set. You know, after Rhino gored Chris Jericho through the SmackDown stage many, many, many years ago, they debuted a new set the following week. Maybe we'll get a new set this Tuesday, celebrate the 1,000th episode of SmackDown. That'd be nice. They had a Miz TV segment with Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles. Miz was out there trying to stir shit between them. I enjoyed this. Not much else to say about it. I just thought it was well done. AJ then beat Shelton Benjamin in a good match. I almost forgot Shelton was still employed. They barely used the guy. So it was nice to see him get to show that, in fact, he can still go. He can still contribute. World Cup qualifiers. There were two of them on this show. Jeff Hardy beat Samoa Joe. They played off of Joe's leg injury that he suffered in the match with AJ in Australia. And this match didn't go more than 2 minutes. Joe, he just collapsed. He could not stand up. The referee waved the match off. Not exactly a sterling finish, but at least, you know, they protected Joe, I guess. They didn't outright beat him. He was trying to get up like a true warrior, I guess, and he couldn't get to his feet. So not only did he lose the feud to AJ Styles and not win the WWE title, but now he can't even qualify for the World Cup. Poor guy. So Jeff Hardy is going to Saudi Arabia. Hopefully not, but as of right now, he is. And Randy Orton in the main event pinned The Big Show. Yes, this is 2018. Do not adjust your dial. Randy Orton against The Big Show. And they had a match. I don't know what else to say about it. I can't say it was all that good. I can't say it was terrible. It was just it was a wrestling match. That's what it was. And Big Show was getting a nice, you know, respectful reaction from the crowd because Big Show's been gone. I think this might have been his first match in over a year. So with Orton qualifying, he joins John Cena, Kurt Angle, and Jeff Hardy in the World Cup. All Americans. Some World Cup they've got here, huh? Rey Mysterio is coming back on SmackDown 1000 this week. He's taking on Shinsuke Nakamura in another World Cup qualifier. And if Rey wins, which I think he has to, it's his first match back, that'll make 5 Americans since Rey was born in the U.S. So this is quite the roster here for this World Cup tournament that they put together so far. Also on Tuesday this week, it is the return of Evolution. Big Dave is back. Triple H is, boy, you know, he's got DX is back and Evolution is back. What's next? Maybe we'll get a corporate ministry reunion next. I mean, what is this, the Triple H Greatest Hits Tour? This guy's having an identity crisis. He doesn't know if he's the COO or if he's a member of DX or a member of Evolution. What other factions? I feel like he was part of another faction. Oh, the McMahon-Helmsley regime. Right, well, we've been living in the McMahon-Helmsley regime now for the last 18 years or whatever it's been. I don't think we need a reformation of that.
Hey, Solo Monster Sounds Off podcast listeners. This is Wade Keller, editor of PWTorch.com. I've been covering professional wrestling as my job for over 30 years since I was a teenager. You might have heard me on the Steve Austin podcast, the Jim Ross Report, and the Not Sam Wrestling podcast. And you can hear me break down professional wrestling 4 times per week. Just search Wade Keller wherever you listen to podcasts. We've got our post-Raw show available a couple hours after Raw with on-site correspondents who describe what happened off-camera, what didn't air on the show that night, plus live callers just like you responding to the show, plus our mailbag segment, and a rotation of co-hosts. Same thing after SmackDown on Tuesday nights. And our flagship drops every Thursday and our interview every Friday. Just search Wade Keller on your podcast app of choice and subscribe to both the red logo and the blue logo. That'll cover you for all 4 weekly shows. Or check out our links on our news and results site, pwtorch.com.
NXT UK has found its home, and not surprisingly, it will be on the WWE Network starting this Wednesday, October 17th, at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. I guess they couldn't get a real TV deal for the show, so the network it is. And, you know, Mae Young Classic, there's only a few weeks left. Lucha Underground's coming to an end in the next few weeks, so I might fill that time up by reviewing this show. We'll see. I'll watch the first episode, and I'll make a decision on that. If that's something that people would like to see, then we may start incorporating that into the podcast soon. Opening segment this week on NXT set up the championship match, or likely championship match, for TakeOver with Tommaso Ciampa and Velveteen Dream. I think it's also possible that Aleister Black could be back soon and that he could end up being added to that and making it a triple threat match. Given that there's a lot of reasons for that too, where I think that actually would make a lot of sense. Because, number one, you have Velveteen Dream, who I guess the fans have basically turned him babyface, but he hasn't, you know, is it really a babyface turn? I'm not sure. It's almost like you have two heels feuding with each other. But they like him enough where he basically, I guess, is a babyface. But you have that kind of weird dynamic. But also, Black never got a rematch. He was due in August to get his rematch for the championship that he lost, and he got hurt. So he is owed a rematch for the NXT Championship. And so I think it would actually... And plus, he's got history with both guys, right? Aleister Black obviously has a history going back to last year with Velveteen Dream. They had that great match. And he's got a history with Ciampa being the one who beat him for the belt. So Yeah, Triple Threat would make a lot of sense if he's going to be back in time before the War Games show. So I would hold that open as a possibility. But they were in the ring this week arguing when Nikki Cross came out. She interrupted. The Full Sail fans chanted Triple Threat at her. They wanted her to be part of the Triple Threat, which was kind of funny, which Triple H made very clear in an interview that he did this week that he does not approve of such an idea. Not a fan of the intergender stuff, is Triple H. So she kept saying, I know, and Ciampa looked really worried, didn't know what she meant by that. You know, technically, the attack on Aleister Black happened in the summer. So I'm waiting for her to come out and say, you know, I know what you did last summer, and then just gut everybody with a fish hook. There was a segment later on this show backstage where Nikki told Cassius Ohno, I know. And he looked very concerned as well. They're doing this with everybody. Everybody looks concerned. You should see me when I watch Raw every week. I have a great look of concern on my face. So Cassius looked very concerned, and I'm sticking to my guns on this. I had picked him. He was my prediction as far as being the one to be revealed as the attacker. I'm losing a little bit of faith with each passing week, but I'm sticking to my guns. As far as him being the person. I will say, I am very intrigued by this storyline. I applaud them for taking a negative with this injury and turning it into what has become, I think, a really, truly intriguing storyline on the show. Hopefully, in the end, it'll have a nice payoff to it. I have more faith in these things with NXT than I would the main roster. If they did allow intergender matches, I would say Nikki... It almost feels like Nikki, in the end, should reveal herself to be the attacker. And then they could build to a big takeover match with her one-on-one with Aleister Black. I don't doubt for a second that the two of them would have a kick-ass match. Like the one that Chelsea Green had this week on Lucha Underground with Pentagon. They had a great match. And I'm also not a huge fan of the intergender singles stuff. Like tags are, I think tags are fine, but I thought that match was outstanding. Keith Lee on the show beat Kona Reeves. Another big win for Keith Lee. He keeps on winning. It's almost like they figured out how to get somebody over. It's a remarkable thing to watch. Ricochet, Pete Dunne, and Adam Cole for the North American title headlined this show. I think this match could have headlined any TakeOver show. That's how good this thing was. It was the best match on any of the shows this week. And there were two excellent matches right behind it on Lucha Underground. Even the Raw main event, it was pretty good. But it was nothing close to this. They recreated that awesome spot from TakeOver between Ricochet and Adam Cole where Cole super kicked him in the... It was the face. Really, it was the neck. He super kicked him in the neck on the way down from the Lion's Salt. Well, here, Ricochet went for the same exact move and got caught by Cole and Pete Dunne, this time with stereo super kicks. So they somehow found a way to perfectly time a recreation of that spot. Later on, Ricochet hit a double Frankensteiner off the top rope on both guys. Finish came after Dunn hit Cole with the bitter end, and he was crawling over to make the cover. What we could not see off camera is that Ricochet was on the ropes. He did a springboard 450 into camera view, landed right on top of Pete Dunn, and pinned him to retain his title. Excellent match. This week they are promoting for NXT a double main event, Nikki Cross taking on Bianca Belair, and the War Raiders challenging Undisputed Era for the tag team title. So that is what's coming up this week. Mae Young Classic, let's run through this real quick. I am still thoroughly enjoying the Mae Young Classic. It's probably, honestly, as good as NXT has been lately, my favorite hour of wrestling television this month has been the Mae Young Classic. I really look forward to watching this show every week. And now we're up to the quarterfinals this week. We had a bunch of good matches. Nothing blow away this week, but some good matches. You know, again, I was left underwhelmed by the Nicole Matthews match. I'm not trying to pile on her or anything like that. You know, I've had people talk her up to me a lot, which is why I was kind of looking forward to seeing her here in this tournament. But I just didn't think her first match was all that great. And this one with Tegan Knox was average. It was an average, you know, okay match. She lost to Tegan Knox. Tegan won with what she calls the shiniest wizard, which is such a troll name for a finisher, right? Like, imagine if you use a shining wizard as your finish, and now you're gonna work with her, right? Well, I'll just name my move the shiniest wizard. Tegan faces Rhea Ripley in the next round. That's going to be tough to watch, knowing what happens in that match. I don't know if that's coming up next week or the week after, but that is the next match for both women. Io Shirai advanced with a win over Zayoxi. Real good opener here. They opened the show. Io blocked a top rope Spanish fly attempt, turned it into a Rana, and then a moonsault off the top rope for the win. She will now face Deonna Purrazzo in the next round after Purrazzo beat Xia Li here on this show with her Fujiwara armbar. Another good match. Xia Li impressed me here. She impressed me in her first match with Karen Q also. She would be someone I would like to see more of. I don't believe that she signed, at least not yet. I don't think she's signed to a deal with them. So I don't know what her status is, if she's back in China now. I say that only because they refer to her as the first Chinese-born person, I think, to compete in WWE. I don't remember if they said she was actually signed by WWE. I don't know if she's currently living in China full-time or if she's here. Wherever she is, though, they should try to get her here because she's really good. Mia Yim beat Caitlyn in the final match to advance to the next round, where she will now meet Toni Storm. Now, that should be a fun match. Mia Yim and Toni Storm should be a lot of fun. The match, that is. Here we had a former Divas champion taking on a former Knockouts champion. Mia's hand was all wrapped up after she punched the ring post in her last match. They really had her play up that hand injury throughout the match. I like that. I like that. It reminded me of Bret Hart, you know, taping the fingers after that first round King of the Ring match he had in 93 with Razor Ramon. Remember that? Coming into the match with Mr. Perfect in the semifinals, the fingers were all taped up and Perfect. I think Perfect made it a point to stomp on them at one point. And then later Bret tried to put the sharpshooter on him and Perfect grabbed the fingers and bent them back. Perfect was doing Pete Dunne before Pete Dunne was doing Pete Dunne. Oh, that was so good. So good. That King of the Ring match with those two in 93 is, I will always stand by the fact that that was a better match than SummerSlam 91. SummerSlam 91 felt more epic, especially at the finish, right? Madison Square Garden, Bret wins the championship. It made for a more epic moment there at the end, but as a match, I'll take that King of the Ring 93 match over almost anything. That's one of my top three favorite pay-per-views of all time. I'd go Royal Rumble 92, King of the Ring 93, and One Night Stand 2005. You want three pay-per-views to go on the network and watch? There you go. You can't go wrong with any one of those. Mia threw some rough leg kicks at Caitlyn to the point where Caitlyn was showing bruises on her thighs. I thought Caitlyn looked good here. You know, during her first run, I never really thought much of her matches. Except for that one really good one she had with AJ Lee at Payback when AJ won her first Divas title. I remember that being pretty good. But Caitlyn's been doing pretty good for herself here in this tournament. She looks like she belongs. She looks like she hasn't lost a step. Caitlyn kicked out of Mia's soul food finish, hit a giant spear that a lot of people bought into as the finish. Mia locked in a knee bar, got Caitlyn to tap out. And so the final round of eight now looks like this. Tegan Nox takes on Rhea Ripley. Toni Storm takes on Mia Yim. Mako Satomura takes on Lacey Lane. And Deonna Purrazzo battles Io Shirai. One of those eight women will be your Mae Young Classic winner. Lucha Underground show was highlighted, I thought, this week by two excellent matches. A tag team match that was all action from bell to bell. And a singles match between Pentagon and Reclusa. Who is, that's Chelsea Green's name here in Lucha Underground. Chelsea Green, by the way, has reportedly signed a WWE deal. And she was even spotted this past week at the Performance Center. And if that's true, then that is a huge pickup for them. If anything, I'm surprised it took them this long to grab her. And it makes me wonder about things like this, because we hear about these Lucha Underground contracts, right? Where you can't appear on another television show for like 90 days until after the deal is done. And a lot of these guys are still in the middle of 7-year contracts that they signed. And yet here, if this is true, I mean, here's a woman who is appearing currently on Lucha Underground, and she has now gone and signed a contract with WWE, allegedly. And so I wonder how that worked. Maybe she just wasn't on a full-time deal. Maybe she's only in for a few appearances with Lucha. I don't know. But anyway, the show opened with a very angry Taya, making her first appearance in weeks after being assaulted at her own wedding by the monster Matanza. She called Antonio Cueto an old piece of shit. bad enough to be a piece of shit, but to be an old piece of shit, I think that's hitting below the belt. She challenged Matanza. Antonio was very quick to oblige, and there was no sacrifice to the gods this week. There was no murder this week. Johnny Mundo ran in after Matanza went for the Wrath of the Gods. He caused a very rare DQ finish here in a Lucha Underground ring, and he attacked Matanza, so that sets up their match at Ultima Lucha. Phoenix Dark, as I call him, and Mil Muertes, once sworn enemies, right? They had what is still my favorite all-time Lucha Underground match, that first Grave Consequences casket match in, I guess it would have been Season 1. Here they were partners against the Mac and Dragon Azteca Jr., given that it's Katrina's life force, right? That's inside Phoenix's body. It's inside his vessel, as Matt Hardy would say. This was basically like having a reunion, right? Was it not? Between Mil and Katrina? I think I just blew your mind, didn't I? That's how I looked at it. In a roundabout way, we kind of had Katrina and Mil back together here. Anyway, go watch this match. I cannot possibly do it justice. Phoenix hit the Phoenix Driver on Dragon Azteca at the same time that Mil hit the Flatliner on Mac. Heels picked up the win. Great, great stuff. We had Creepy Doll Man, Ricky Mundo, pinning Famous B. And then after the match, he revealed that it was he who freed Matanza during the Johnny and Taya wedding and caused all the chaos that ensued. He says, as long as Taya is around, Johnny will never respect him. And so he challenged her to a match at Ultima Lucha. And then he put beautiful Brenda, who was one of Taya's bridesmaids at the ill-fated wedding, he put her in a crossface while his creepy doll sat in the corner and watched. Doll really is pretty creepy. Reclusa made her in-ring debut in Lucha Underground against Pentagon Dark. We have now seen Io Shirai, Kairi Sane, and now Chelsea Green, all in matches against Pentagon. I am not a huge fan of these intergender matches, as I said, but this was great. This was a great... I can recognize a great match when there is one. This was a great match. The one thing they always take pains to do on this show, I will say, is to book these women to put them on the same level as the men. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to actually portray them as truly being on the same level. The men, they don't hold back, which makes for some uncomfortable moments in these matches. But neither do the ladies. You know, the ladies, they're so talented. They can go in there. They can believably hang with them. The roster of women they have, whether it's, you know, Reclusa, whether it's Ivelisse, they can believably hang with a lot of these guys. Well, some of the men. I mean, if she was in there with, you know, Cage, then it wouldn't be very believable. But Lucha Underground does a far better job than WWE does of making their women out to be believable badasses. Just that, you know, sometimes they go a little too far, I think, with the abuse. They did that the week before this. I didn't have a chance to review it on the podcast last week, but they did a match between Marty the Moth and his sister Mariposa. And Marty just absolutely beat the crap out of her, to the point where it was getting uncomfortable. Here, though, Reclusa went on the attack right away. She was kicking Pentagon's ass, frankly, in the first 2 minutes of this match. Pentagon then, later on, hit a Penta driver for a near fall. Reclusa kicked out. Then he hit a package pile driver on the apron, rolled her back inside, and again, she kicked out. How are you going to kick out of an apron package pile driver? Come on. Male or female? I didn't like seeing that. I didn't like seeing somebody kick out of that. But people were going nuts for this, and then she kicked him in the dick and hit a Canadian destroyer for a near fall. Pentagon came back, hit a package pile driver for the win. You see, that's my issue with things like that. You hit a package pile driver on the apron for a near fall, but then you hit a regular one and you win. We see that so many times where somebody will hit a spectacular move. I guess the idea is, well, it softened them up. Ah, bullshit. Like, you hit a spectacular move, you should win with it. Like, if Brock Lesnar had hit that shooting star press at WrestleMania against Kurt Angle and didn't miss and almost kill himself. Imagine if he had hit that unbelievable move, a guy as big as Brock, he lands the perfect shooting star press, and then Kurt kicks out. And then Brock follows it up with a weak-looking F5, and then he wins. That wouldn't make a whole lot of sense now, would it? So that kind of stuff bugs me. But after the match, I did nonetheless, I really enjoyed this. That did not take away from my enjoyment of the match. I thought this was great. Afterwards, Pentagon teased breaking her arm. He opted instead to grab a bag of thumbtacks from underneath the ring. But before he could pile drive her onto them, Marty the Moth came out, made the save. He went all Negan on Pentagon, hit him with a barbed wire bat. And Reclusa grabbed a gas can, and they poured gasoline on Pentagon. And Marty takes out a lighter. He threatens to set him on fire, and the show goes off the air. So hopefully Pentagon was not burned alive. I suspect that this Cero Miedo match that they're having at Ultima Lucha is going to be quite the spectacle. Especially if the first one was any indication. The first Cero Miedo match that Pentagon had with Vampiro. So Ultima Lucha 4 is in 3 weeks. They're spreading it out over 2 episodes. And that'll be the end of the 4th season. This is a shorter season than usual. I think, I want to say that a 5th season is already greenlit, if not already partially filmed. So I think a season 5 is happening for sure, I think. But after that, who knows? We seem to go through this all the time with this show, where maybe it'll live, maybe it'll die. I enjoy it still, so I hope it lives on. An announcement was made this week that Jeff Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling is teaming up with Wrestling Travel to offer travel packages to Wrestle Kingdom 13 at the Tokyo Dome in January. This is the quote here from this wondrous press release. We are absolutely delighted to team up with Global Force Entertainment and its CEO, Jeff Jarrett, a WWE Hall of Fame member and iconic figure in the world of wrestling. This according to Lee McAteer, the founder of Wrestling Travel. The prospect of working with GFE, Global Force Entertainment, is incredibly exciting as we strive to deliver unrivaled opportunities for fans to secure tickets and packages for the very best wrestling events throughout the world. Then Jeff Jarrett, he chimed in, the magnitude and scope of this event is something every fan should experience for themselves, from the pageantry to the... Okay, whatever. So, Jarrett went from wrestler to promoter to gold bar salesman, and now to travel agent. They are offering packages from New York, San Francisco, London, and Sydney, all to Tokyo for the Wrestle Kingdom show, the beginning of January. Okay, those are the destinations from which the flights would depart for Japan. And get a load of these prices. Okay, here I thought the WWE travel packages were pricey. From New York or from San Francisco. This includes a return flight, a one-way transfer from the airport to the hotel, a hotel room, and one ticket to Wrestle Kingdom. They don't say what hotel, is it 4-star hotels, is it a Quality Inn? They don't say where the ticket is for Wrestle Kingdom. Is it first 5 rows? Are you all the way up in the nosebleeds? They don't specify. You would think if it was that good, they would specify. So I'm assuming it's not that great. But that's what you get, right? $4,000 for one person. From Sydney, it's $5,999 in Australian dollars, which works out to be about the same as it costs here in the U.S., maybe slightly less. But it's a much shorter trip from Sydney to Tokyo than it is from New York to Tokyo. I think it's like 5 hours less and a lot of miles less, but yet it costs the same. £2,999 if you're coming from London. Originally, they were offering an installment option to pay, which would have worked out to be £34.99 in pounds in 2 payments or £29.99 in 1 payment. So they were charging an extra £500 just to pay in installments. And then somebody on Twitter called them out on this, and within 10 minutes, they backtracked and they said they were doing away with the installment option. Now look, I recognize that, you know, overseas travel is not inexpensive, and it depends on, like I said, what hotel, the quality of the hotel that you're being put up at, where's your ticket to Wrestle Kingdom, is it a close seat, are you really far away? It depends on that. I'm sure, like I said, if it was a super good seat, they would mention that. But this just, I mean, you look at these prices. This is ridiculous. Especially when you click to book and you choose the price for 2 people, it doubles. It's not like the price goes down, you get a discount. It doubles. So if you're going to go as a couple or if 2 friends, you don't want to go alone and you're going to travel from JFK Airport in New York to Tokyo. We're going to go to Wrestle Kingdom, okay? Two buddies are going to go, $8,000. This is ridiculous. Like, there is not enough Global Force gold in the world to get me to pay $8,000 to Double J to go to Wrestle Kingdom. Please don't do that. This week's sad tweet goes to at Fox News for tweeting out a link to an article with this gem. Jamie Lee Curtis wields firearms in new Halloween movie despite advocating for gun control. This was too good to pass up. I facepalmed so hard, I think I gave myself a concussion. Yes, Jamie Lee Curtis uses guns to fight off a deranged serial killer stalking her in a Halloween mask in a movie. I don't recall hearing her going after anybody on the set of one of those Activia commercials with a 357 Magnum. What is this guy? The guy's name who wrote that? What is this guy's name? Louis Cassiano is the guy who wrote this. I am dumber for having read your story. I'm pretty sure Bryan Cranston wasn't in the bathroom at Comic-Con last week doing crystal meth either. What a stupid article. Let's get to your mailbag questions. If you have them, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. We got a good one here. And this is one I get asked about a lot, or I have been over the years. I've gotten questions from a lot of listeners in the UK who are always asking me, when is WWE going to run a WrestleMania in the UK? Or why haven't they come back to the UK for a big show? Well, this question comes from Maddie in the UK. Triple H gave an interview. Boy, Triple H gave a lot of interviews this week, didn't he? He gave an interview to The Mirror this week talking about why WWE has not brought a WrestleMania to Wembley Stadium or been back to Wembley for a big show since SummerSlam 1992. He talked about the difficulty with the time zone difference and also said that they haven't come back because the show was not a success. Do you buy this as an excuse? No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. In the interview that Maddie is referring to, and I read the interview, this was Triple H's full answer to the question. I just want to make sure I'm giving the full context here. He said, the time zones are the big kicker. We have to go where the most people can watch. I always hear about Wembley. I always hear about how it was this massive success. It was not. From a business standpoint, it was not. That's why we haven't been back. And that's why we're still trying to figure it out. But when the time is right, absolutely. So we finally get some semblance of an answer here. Two reasons. Number one, they haven't been back, A, because of time zones, and B, because he claims that the first SummerSlam in Wembley was not a business success. So let's break this down here, because he claims the event wasn't a big success business-wise, which I think is a little misleading. They sold out Wembley Stadium, legit. 80,000 fans, still one of the biggest crowds, legitimately biggest crowds, real number, that WWE has ever done to this day. And even in this article here, they quote the promoter of the show in the article, the guy Martin Goldsmith is his name, and he says, they only had a few newspaper ads and a little bit of promotion on Sky, and they were able to sell that show out. So put that on the side, right? They did over £1 million in merch money on that show. Just for that show alone. That's a lot of merchandise. Now, what I think he's referring to, because he didn't specify this, but what I think Triple H is referring to is the buy rate for the show. And you can look up old pay-per-view buy rates online. It's very easy to do. The buy rate for that show was not great. It was not considered great. It was down from previous years. But you got to remember, this show did not air in the U.S. for another 2 days. The event was on August 28th. It did not air on pay-per-view here in this country until August 31st. So that's number one. Number two, this was the first WWE pay-per-view, I believe, since that modern age at that time of pay-per-views that did not have Hulk Hogan on the card. That would have been the first pay-per-view to not have Hulk Hogan on it. Although, to hear Hogan tell it, he was on the card that night, looked out into the crowd and saw an empty seat where he had given a ticket the day before to a little Hulkamaniac with cancer. And he knew at that moment when he saw the empty seat that the child had died, and so he wrote a song for him called Hulkster in Heaven. I'll never get tired of telling that story, by the way. So I guess there was some rip in space and time, and in some alternate dimension, Hulk Hogan did in fact wrestle that night at Wembley Stadium. Here on Earth One, He didn't. And that was the first pay-per-view that he didn't wrestle on for WWE up to that point. That was a big deal. Hogan was still, you know, you could talk about how the fans were starting to boo him and stuff, but Hogan was still a draw. He proved that when he went to WCW a couple of years later, and they did very well. They did very good pay-per-view business with Hulk Hogan. So, no Hogan. Ric Flair, he was on the show, but he didn't wrestle. There was no promoted match even for Ric Flair on that show, bizarrely enough. They had a double main event, both matches, babyface against babyface. So I think it's misleading because he makes it, you hear that and it's almost like, well, it didn't do good business-wise because we just didn't sell tickets or whatever. That's not true. It's misleading to say that. There are lots of reasons that you could point to why SummerSlam that year did a poor buy rate and didn't do well in that regard, none of which have to do with time zones. Like today, for example. If they did a show from a different time zone, and they do that a lot now. I mean, I just woke up for a friggin' Australian show at 6 o'clock in the morning about a week ago. So now they do it with the network. They can do stuff like that. But today, if they do a show from a different time zone, they wouldn't wait 2 days to air it. It's not airing 2 days later. So yeah, there's a time zone difference, and it's kind of a bitch. But you can make it work. Let's just be honest about why the UK fans have not gotten to WrestleMania so far. He wouldn't say this in the interview, so I'll say it. The reason that the UK have not gotten a WrestleMania yet or another big, big show like that is because they won't pay them for it. You know goddamn well that if the Brits threw a bunch of money at WWE the way that the Saudis did or the way that other cities do when they bid for WrestleMania, I mean, at least as far as like tax breaks or some other kind of incentive, that they would be there in a heartbeat. You would have had a WrestleMania from the UK years ago if that were the case. They can cry about time zones all they want to, but it's just an excuse. If you put together a card that people want to see, they will pay for it. They will buy it. And I'm not even sure that matters today, honestly, because all these shows are on the network, and they give the network away for free. So if you want to know when the UK is going to get a WrestleMania, they'll get a WrestleMania when London makes it worth their while and not a day sooner than that. Salvador from California. Listening to the podcast and your comments of why nobody feels like stars. Obviously, the over-reliance on 50-year-olds and horrendous creative is a massive part of it. But another I thought of was age. Being a younger wrestling fan, I didn't live through the Attitude Era and don't have nostalgia for guys like Austin, Rock, and Triple H. My era was the late 2000s, early 2010s. There are guys now on the current roster who I do see as stars, like AJ Styles, The Shield, and Kevin Owens. The Shield specifically have been in some of my all-time favorite WWE moments. My point is, being at the peak of my fandom, these people have become stars in my eyes because I associate them with my favorite moments. Do you think that older people who live through... What do you mean by that? No. Do you think that older people who live through the Attitude Era see these guys as legends and stars because they experienced them during their wrestling fandom peak? Yeah, of course. I mean, that's not the only part of it, but that's a very big part of it. You know, when I talk about the golden era on this podcast, I'm referring to the late 80s, the early 90s, and WWF. And business wasn't even all that great at that point for the company, especially in that early 90s period. But I get very nostalgic about that because that's what I grew up on. I grew up on Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man and the Million Dollar Man and the Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation and Demolition and Jake and Perfect and Andre and Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior and all these guys. See, I can rattle these names off like they're nothing. And I kind of feel badly, honestly, for the people who only grew up in the late 2000s or early 2010s because they really missed out on something special back in the day. I mean, the guys now athletically are just so much more ahead of where those guys were back then, but I just think in terms of what pro wrestling should be and the characters and the theatrics of it and everything, it was so good back then. And you probably feel that way if you grew up, you know, watching the NWA and the Carolinas, and you may have hated WWF. And you grew up on the Four Horsemen and the Road Warriors and Sting and Nikita Koloff and Lex Luger and, you know, guys like that. So yes, absolutely. It has a lot to do with what you were watching and who you were watching when you were younger. But you can't lay it all on that. The product itself was just better. It was just better. It was more exciting. And I'll say this much. And I was having a conversation with Webmaster Mike about this last night after the TNA Hall of Fame induction. we were talking about Raw and just overall how god-awful it's been, and made the point that, you know, when they went to 3 hours permanently, they sold their soul, is what they did. They went to 3 hours in 2012. We've now had 6 years of Raw being permanently 3 hours every single week. And that was the beginning of the slide that we're seeing now in terms of the ratings and just the overall interest in the product. I have so many people who say to me, I don't even watch anymore. I listen to your show. I listen, you know, I watch other podcasts and YouTube shows. That's how I keep up with the product. I just can't take it anymore. And it's happening more and more and more. And we're seeing this now. The chickens are coming home to roost, because when they went to 3 hours every Monday night, go back and listen to those old sound offs. You don't need to just take my word for it. I talked about this at the time. A lot of people did. I talked about the fact they're going to burn their audience out. I didn't know they were getting $50 million or whatever they were getting. It's a lot of money, yes. But you know what? Saudi Arabia, let's look at that whole situation. Yeah, it's a lot of money. But sometimes you got to do the right thing. You got to make some other move that in the end is going to work out for your company and sacrifice money. So yeah, they make a lot of money off that third hour of Raw, but look what's happened. Look what they've done. Look at all the people they've chased away. Look at all the people they've burned out. And the point that we were making when I was talking to Mike last night was, there was a point in time, you don't have to go back to the Attitude Era, but I'll use that as an example, right? Because that's what I remember. It was just an exciting time to be a fan. You had Raw, you had Nitro, but the key back then was that you had a show that was, let's say it was 2 hours long at that point, right? Whether it was an hour or 2 hours, whatever. When I would watch that show most weeks, you'd have weeks where maybe the show wasn't so good. Most weeks, I would watch that show, and when it was over and the little copyright notice would come on in the corner of the screen, I was pissed because I wasn't ready for it to be over. I couldn't wait until the next week to find out what was going to happen next or see who was going to jump ship from one show to the other or what the big main event was going to be. Maybe it was a big championship match, whatever. It left me wanting more. The addition of that third hour of Raw was the beginning of the end. Because what it did was, it created a situation on what is supposed to be the big flagship show. I mean, now there's just such an oversaturation of content, it's just ridiculous. I mean, they have 15 different shows now. But I'm just using Raw as an example. The minute that people realized, I don't have time for this. I can no longer watch the entire show in full every single week. So I'll miss the first hour. Or maybe this week I'll just miss Raw altogether. And that starts happening and you realize, hey, wait a minute, I missed Raw this week, or I missed the first 2 hours of the show. I didn't really miss much. Huh. And that's the beginning of the end. Once people realize that they don't have to watch anymore because nothing really happens, nothing ever really changes, it's not must see, there's no reason to be plopped down in front of the television to watch every single minute of every hour of these shows. The shows become expendable, they're no longer important anymore. They're no longer must-see, and people can go do other things. Or go watch something else. And I'm telling you, that was the beginning of the end right there. Adding that third hour of Raw, I hope the money is worth it. I really do. I hope in the end the money for them was well worth it, because I can only imagine the number of people that they have chased off in the years that have followed because the show is so unnecessarily bloated. People get overwhelmed. They just feel like, I don't have time for this. I can't possibly watch everything. Whereas before, I couldn't get enough of this stuff. I felt like if I missed even 5 minutes of this, I was missing out on something big. I was going to be out of the loop on something big. Ask yourself that question. Do you really have that feeling now when you watch these shows? Lawrence from England. I'm a father of an 11-year-old girl. I'm also one of those WWE fans who stopped watching many years ago, but listened through yourself and Soup. I got the network 2 years ago because the Bayley Sasha Becky NXT women's wrestling scene was full of strong role models for my daughter. Now, he goes on in this slide. I don't want to read the whole thing here, but he's going through this email. And basically, he was put off by something he saw at the Australian show when the Bellas came out and Nikki Bella was shaking her ass like a pole dancer on her way to the ring. And he was very upset by this because he was watching that show with his daughter and didn't know that was going to happen. And he, you know, just feels like that's not a good role model for his daughter. And you know, he had to tell his daughter that, you know, you can't be like the main roster women here. And He said that they're definitely not going to be watching the all-women's pay-per-view and what I thought of it. And look, I don't have a daughter. I don't have a kid. So I'm sure that if I did, my perspective would probably be different. I can totally get where you're coming from on that. And Nikki's been gone for a while, so, you know, you probably didn't know. That's her shtick. She comes out and she twirls and she shakes her ass. That's just sort of, that's what she does. And if you have a young child and you think that the women on the roster now or in NXT are, you know, a positive influence, I could see that. I could see, and then they push that narrative, right? Strong, empowered women. They don't focus on the TNA stuff, the tits and ass stuff like they did back in the day. It is a very different product now. I don't want to tell you what to do. Obviously, if you're uncomfortable, I wouldn't show your daughter. I certainly wouldn't show your daughter any Bella Twins matches then. Your probably safe bet is to just stick to NXT. And definitely don't show her Lucha Underground. Although I have to say, you know, Lucha Underground, yeah, there's violence and blood and gore and the women get their asses kicked by the men. But like I was saying earlier, you know, the thing with Lucha Underground is you talk about role models, you know, they do a better job than WWE does at making those women out to be really strong, powerful role models. So if you can get beyond the violence and the blood and stuff that you'll find on that show, honestly, I would kind of say I look at those women as being something of a, you know, like a positive influence or a role model. If you're a young girl watching wrestling, you're a big wrestling fan, I mean, the women on that show are like superheroes. They're like real life superheroes. And you won't find too many of them coming out shaking their ass. Let's see here. Umer from Waltham, Massachusetts, following up from your discussion on Conor McGregor and Habib, how a slap on the wrist to Habib, much like McGregor before him, would be rewarding bad behavior. What if the producers at E! Decided to use the whole Liv Morgan concussion fiasco as a storyline for a couple of episodes of Total Bellas or Total Divas? Do you think that would be rewarding Brie for being reckless? What if the whole cyberbullying narrative turns into a couple of reality show episodes? I feel like it's inevitable but kind of immoral at the same time. Well, this is not the week to be upset about WWE doing something immoral or participating in something immoral. They got bigger issues to deal with right now. Could they turn the whole concussion thing into a storyline on the show? I'd be shocked if they didn't. I mean, they've done that before, right? They've taken injuries, I think, and have covered them on the show for entertainment. I don't see why this would be any different. In fact, I think it would be smart for them to do that. Is it rewarding Brie? I don't think it's rewarding. I mean, look, you're implying that by doing that, Brie is going to look at this and go, oh, well, I ought to kick some other people in the face. Now, I don't think it's rewarding anything, but I think, look, it happened in the course of a match, and it's fair game if they want to cover it as part of some kind of, you know, storyline on the episode. I mean, I think it would be pretty shitty if they did that and Liv Morgan wasn't comfortable with it. I would want to check with her and make sure she's okay with it. But yeah, I would be kind of stunned, frankly, if they didn't. Amir from Blackburn, UK. I'm a huge New York Yankees fan and am well aware that you are a devoted Mets fan. On August 1st, when the Mets lost to the Washington Nationals 25-4, I remember you sounding off the following week on the podcast. Can you give me one or two other examples where an MLB team lost in humiliating fashion? The Yankees lost to the Red Sox in Game 3 of the ALDS this week was upsetting for me as a Yankees fan. Yeah, it's not very often I get an email from someone in the UK who's a big Major League Baseball fan, so that's kind of cool. Humiliating losses, well, I mean, I am a Mets fan, so you've come to the right place. Just this year, I mean, the Mets lost a game where they were called out for batting out of order in the first inning. I mean, how the hell does that even happen? How does that even happen? Well, the Mets made it happen. It was something like the first time since 1977 or something that, I don't know about any Major League team, but the Mets at least, since something like that had happened. But if it makes you feel any better, when I think of humiliating defeats, I always think of the ball rolling through Bill Buckner's legs in the 86 World Series and the Mets beating the Red Sox. That always puts a smile on my face. And Joe from Camden, New Jersey. I saw your tweet about the Better Call Saul season finale. What do you think of the show overall, and how does it match up to Breaking Bad? I have been keeping up with Better Call Saul through its first four seasons. I've stuck with it. Started slow, but I've stuck with it for four seasons, and I can't say that it's better. I won't say that it's better than Breaking Bad, but it is now up there in the same realm, I would say, as Breaking Bad. It does sometimes move at a slower pace than I would like for it to, but if you stick with it, it gets better. I think every season has been better than the one before it. I think it has absolutely gotten better with each season, especially now we're being introduced to more of those characters that you would recognize from Breaking Bad. They're really merging the Breaking Bad world into the story, into Saul's story here on the show. The finale, I thought, was the best episode of the show yet. That final scene, I don't want to give anything away, but that final scene was just masterful. Absolutely, it's so good. Think about what they did here. They managed to take a secondary character, a character that existed purely for comedic value from Breaking Bad, and they have built an entire spinoff around that character entirely centered on the character's backstory. It's unbelievable. I mean, Breaking Bad is a tough act to follow. You know, Breaking Bad is the greatest television show ever made. The Sopranos is up there with it. The Shield is my other all-time favorite TV show. Sopranos paved the way for the other two. I mean, without Tony Soprano, there is no Vic Mackey. Without Tony Soprano, there is no Walter White. But, you know, again, it's all subjective. I haven't seen every television show ever made. Nobody can definitively say what the best is. It's their opinion, because I don't know anybody who's seen every television show ever made, and if they have, they need to get themselves a friggin' job. Like, for me, I never saw The Wire. My own brother is like, yeah, you gotta see The Wire. It's the best show. And my brother doesn't sound like a chain smoker. I'm just doing that impression for some reason. But, like, I haven't seen The Wire, and I hear nothing but good things about it. People say The Wire is better than The Shield. I find that hard to believe, but I can't say for sure because I haven't seen it. I haven't watched a single full episode of Game of Thrones. I know they have the little guy on there, Dinklage, whatever his name is, and they have dragons and shit. That's my great description of Game of Thrones. Look, people say it's great. People were going nuts for Game of Thrones at Comic-Con when I was there last week. They were dressed up, I think, as characters from Game of Thrones. I don't know. But I haven't seen them, so I can't say. But for me, the top three best television shows that I've ever seen, and I think in history, Breaking Bad, The Shield, and The Sopranos. I don't know what that says about me, that each one of those shows, and I'll throw Ozark in there too on Netflix, that's another favorite of mine. Each of those shows are based around lead characters that are bad people. Like, even if they didn't start out that way, they turned into bad, terrible people who kill and do other horrible, nasty things. And yet, I sit here and I root for them not to get caught. Although, by the end of The Shield, after what Mackey did, after what he did on there and then what Walter did to Mike on Breaking Bad. By that point, I actually did want them to get caught. But, like, there's so many unlikable characters on these shows, and yet I love them so much. I will say this, the single greatest television episode in the history of television is that Ozymandias episode of Breaking Bad from season 5. You will not find a more gut-wrenching, exciting, depressing 45 minutes of television than that. That is a work of art. They should put that in the Smithsonian. And not too far behind that one is the Crawl Space episode from season 4. And the final scene in that episode with Walter in the crawl space under the house. I defy anybody to tell me that that isn't some of the best television ever made. We'll wrap it up there. Keep sending in your questions, wrestling and otherwise. Try to get to as many of them as I can. The new Halloween movie, it's coming up this week. I cannot wait. I already got my tickets ready. Me and my bro, we're going to go. We're all pre-ordered and ready to go for Friday night. And so I will have a quick review on the show next week. I'll try not to give away spoilers or anything, but I'll give my thoughts on the new Halloween movie here on the podcast next week once I've had a chance to see it. Speaking of Halloween, Halloween meetup, Saturday, October 27th, 6 p.m., Beer House NYC. You'll find the event invite on Facebook, and I've linked to it as well on my Twitter. Please RSVP if you can, if you have not already done so, whether you're a possible, whether you are for sure coming. I'd like to get a better sense of headcount. We've got a pretty decent group already committed to coming, so that's cool. Costumes are not required, but they are encouraged. And if we get enough people dressed up, maybe we'll have ourselves a little Halloween costume contest and give away a prize. All the more reason to show up. So that's coming up on the 27th. You can use my Lyft promo code. If you sign up for a Lyft account, I know some of you Uber people, you might be using Uber, but I use Lyft more than Uber. And if you don't have an account, sign up for one. And before you take your first ride, punch in the promo code SOLOMONSTER and get yourself a free ride. You know how they say there's no free rides in life? Well, whoever said that didn't know what they were talking about. Promo code SOLOMONSTER. Take a Lyft. You can take a Lyft to Beer House for the meetup on the 27th. Follow me on Twitter at SOLOMONSTER. The video from last night's ceremony, the big brawl, the big pull apart with Austin Aries and Johnny Impact is on there. I'll include that on the YouTube channel as well in the next day or two. I'm all out of time. I'm going to Bound for Glory tonight. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier. I'm actually going to the show. I will physically be leaving here and going to... And it takes a lot to get me to go out all the way to Queens from where I am. It's a pain in the ass this weekend because my train is out of service. They're doing track maintenance. I have to take a train halfway to a shuttle bus. And I have to take a shuttle bus to another train. I got to take the train out to Queens. A pain in the frickin' balls. But I am doing it because I expect tonight to be a good show. So I'm looking forward to Bound for Glory. I will be there. And if you're there, say hello if you happen to see me. And I will be back with a brand new podcast next weekend. That'll be episode 569. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a good week. And I will see you back here again for more Sound Off real soon. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The SOLOMONSTER sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay, that's racist.
Well, no, it's... I'm just
racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, those are the racists.
SOLOMONSTER sounds off.
Since 2007, the SOLOMONSTER sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
SOLOMONSTER sound off.